We would like to welcome you to the December 11th meeting of the Savannah Historic District Board of Review. The purpose of this board is to promote the educational, cultural, economic, and general welfare of the city of Savannah. This board is appointed by City Council and is not affiliated with any for-profit or nonprofit organization. Preservation standards, visual compatibility factors, and design standards established in the City of Savannah zoning ordinance are the basis for evaluating the compatibility of changes in new development. The board cannot consider criteria not specifically identified within the ordinance. Items such as landscaping, parking availability, traffic, noise, and impact on property values are not within this board's purview and cannot be a factor in the issuance or denial of a certificate of appropriateness. Similarly, personal preferences will not be the basis for a decision. Signposting. Members of the board receive packages containing applications in the week before the meeting and individually visit the sites of the projects. If a project is not properly posted, it is removed from the agenda and rescheduled. Were there any projects that were not posted this month? Hearing none, we will move on to the consent agenda. These agenda items have been found by the preservation officer to be in accordance with the preservation standards, visual compatibility factors, and design standards, and have apparent consensus with no known objections from the public. This month, we have two items on the consent agenda, file number 24-006109 COA for 116 Whitaker Street, and file number 24-006191 COA 452 Price Street. Is there any member of the public or any board member who wishes to remove an item from the consent agenda to the regular agenda? Hearing none, is there a motion to approve the consent agenda?
Hugel, so moved.
Thank you, Mr. Hugel. Do I have a second?
Second, Thompson.
Thank you, Mr. Thompson. We'll do a voice vote. All in favor?
Aye.
Any opposed? That motion is approved. Next up, we have the adoption of the agenda. Is there a motion for approval of today's agenda?
Higgins, so moved.
Thank you, Mr. Higgins. Do I have a second?
Thompson, second.
Thank you, Mr. Thompson. We'll do a voice vote again. All those in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Any opposed? The agenda is approved. Approval of minutes. Minutes from the previous meeting have been attached to the agenda and posted online. Is there a motion for approval of the previous month's meetings? I think it was November 13th.
So moved. Hugel.
Thank you, Mr. Hugel. Do I have a second?
Higgins, second.
Thank you, Mr. Higgins. We'll do a voice vote. All those in favor?
Aye. Aye.
The motion to approve the minutes has been approved and is passed. We do not have any items that have been requested to be removed from the agenda. We do have four items on the continued agenda. We have file number 24-004958 COA for 2324 East Oglethorpe Avenue. In addition, we have file number 24-004957 COA for 301 Tatnall Street, and a petition file number 24006114 COA 8 through 14 East Broughton Street. Do I have a motion to approve the continued agenda?
Hugel, so moved.
Thank you, Mr. Hugel. Do I have a second?
Thompson, second.
Thank you, Mr. Thompson. We'll do a voice vote. All those in favor?
Aye.
Thank you. The motion to approve the continued agenda has been passed. If your item was on the continued agenda, you may now exit stage right. Moving on to the regular agenda, staff will present the application with a recommendation. The petitioner will then have the opportunity to respond to the recommendations. We ask that the petitioner limit their presentation to 10 minutes or less and only address items identified as inconsistent with the ordinance and questions raised by this board. The public will then have the opportunity to comment, after which the petitioner may respond to public comment. The board will then go into board discussion, at which point no further testimony is received unless specifically requested of and granted by the chairwoman. We will structure board discussion by going around to each board member two times for comment. You do not have to provide comment if you have none. If you are joining us virtually for the first time, locate your control panel. Public that wishes to submit comment, use the raise the hand feature. If you are joining us in person, please make sure you sign in outside the room before making public comment and state your name when you come up to the podium. All right, first item up on the regular agenda is the petition of Signs of the South, file number 24-004393 for 110 East President Street, non-illuminated and illuminated sign. Caitlin.
All right, thank you, Madam Chair and members of the board. This is Caitlin Chamberlain. So the applicant's requesting approval to install one non-illuminated wall sign and one illuminated wall sign on two different elevations for the property located at 110 East President Street. This project was first presented at the September 11th HDBR meeting. There was concern about installing the wall sign on the Drayton Street side with an adhesive that would adhere directly to the historic masonry, as had been used on earlier signage. This residue is now highly visible with the removal of the former Lot Barber architect sign that had been there previously. The glue residue is seen on the Drayton and President Street elevations, most prominently in the areas where the Standard Oil Company engraved signs can be seen. In the time since the last meeting, staff was able to locate a few previous COAs for the signs on the building, but nothing about the original installation over that Standard Oil Company lettering. In 2007, Lot Barber Architects requested a replacement of the existing sign, and it vaguely describes that they will be installed in the same manner as the previous sign, but without going into detail. So for this petition today, staff has been in constant communication with the petitioners about ways to move the project forward. The petitioners reached out to various preservation companies to determine the best options for removal of the existing residue and if there was any knowledge of types of sign adhesives that could ensure that the sign was installed with the gentlest means possible. It was decided that Samet Construction would handle the residue removal and Signs of the South would still manufacture the signs. In this case, instead of adhesive, the petitioners are now requesting to install the sign with lead expansion anchors. So this is what the proposed sign would look like. And then we're seeing kind of a diagram of the areas where they would be installed and the panel sizes. So these details were provided in conversations with the petitioners. The reason for the change was that if the sign was removed in the future, it could be less damaging to patch the anchor holes and leave less of a trace behind than more glue would. Lead anchors are intended for use with screws in masonry, brick, or block, and the ones for this project are a quarter inch in diameter, which you had seen during the pre-meeting. Staff conversations with the applicant also included discussion of whether the sign could be installed using the existing holes from earlier signage. The applicant had inspected them and has structural concerns with reusing them based on their age and exposure to the elements. They're also not all the same size and inconsistently placed, and will be patched as part of the repair portion of the project. The submittal packet does include those details on the repair work proposed to be undertaken before the installation of a new sign. So with regard to the Secretary of the Interior standards, Samet Construction noted the concerns about removing some of the adhesive, just that whether that will cause more damage to the glazed terracotta than it has already undergone. So the intent is to use the gentlest means possible for this removal. With regard to the lead expansion anchors being proposed rather than the glue for the Drayton Street sign, staff has concerns about the volume of anchors creating new holes in the masonry since the applicant's inspection deemed the existing ones unusable. While it would be easier and potentially less damaging to later patch them as opposed to cleaning more glue that may absorb into the masonry, the use of 33 of them is not an insignificant amount. Staff recommends using the existing mortar joints to install where possible to minimize that impact and to use the gentlest means possible when patching the existing holes. Aside from this, staff found that the sign standards were met for sizing, visual compatibility. Didn't see issues with the smaller illuminated sign on the President Street side of the building. So with that, staff recommends to approve the request to install one wall sign on the Drayton Street elevation and one illuminated wall sign on the President Street elevation for the property at 110 East President Street, with the following conditions to be reviewed and verified by staff prior to starting the project, because the work is otherwise visually compatible and meets the standards. One, ensure that the lead anchors are installed through mortar joints where it's feasible to do so, and two, ensure that the gentlest means possible is used for the cleaning of the adhesive residue and patching work. Thank you.
Thank you, Caitlin. Are there questions for staff?
Who will head? Just one.
Go ahead, Mr. Hull.
The sign is going to be in a series of panels. Is that correct?
Yes.
And what type of material are the panels out of? Is metal, concrete?
Let's see. There's, I believe it was some kind of acrylic maybe, but it's digitally printed vinyl wrapped ACM with cut dimensional acrylic logo and company name.
Thanks.
Yeah.
Higgins, I've got a couple of questions about the Drayton Street facade. So previously there were holes drilled in it?
Yes.
Have those been repaired?
Not at the time, but it was part of their plan to do so.
So by them wanting to drill 33 new holes into that facade, will that not cause additional permanent damage to a really iconic facade?
That was why, we had talked about this with them, but that was why our recommendation was to use those mortar joints if possible, because that's a high volume of new holes going in there. I know that there is a plan to patch what exists, and in theory, patching the holes might be less damaging than trying to remove more glue in the future. But we had certainly discussed the damage of 33 more holes going in there.
Did the petitioner explore with you an alternative sign, perhaps, like as the bank has on the corner of State and Drayton?
We had talked about that in the very beginning phases of the project. Initially, they did want to have a projecting sign like the Cadence Bank has in addition to the wall sign. We said you can only have one or the other as per the ordinance, and that's where they chose the wall sign. But there hasn't been further discussion of alternates since then, but perhaps that's something the applicant can weigh in on today.
And I know it's partially conjecture on your part, but the Cadence sign that's on the corner, is its attachment less damaging to the building than perhaps what's being proposed?
It's less, it's a smaller sign, so it seems to reason that yes, it would be less damaging. Okay.
Are there additional questions for staff? Thank you, Caitlin. Would the petitioner please come forward and state your name for the record?
Hunter Burns, Samet Corporation.
Did you have a presentation, or do you just want to take some questions from staff?
We can just take questions.
The board?
Yeah.
Are there questions for the petitioner? Mr. Higgins?
Higgins. Have you explored a corner sign similar to what exists for Samet, as opposed to doing something that's intrusive?
We did. At the onset of this, we came to MPC to see what would be allowable or possibly allowable. And since there was pre-existing signs in the locations that we are proposing, this is not a new location. There was a sign there that was existing from a previous tenant from 5 or 6 years ago. It was felt like that sign was the most appropriate for the building.
Have you explored other means than drilling 33 new holes?
And we did. Of course, the previous signs were installed with adhesive. The question would become any adhesive that would not affect the glazing of the terracotta. we successfully patched out there and actually had our design architect, LS3P, review some of our patching, previous damage from the previous building owners and tenants. We, if you walk around the building, we patch, you know, to about probably, 15 foot in height around the perimeter of existing damage. This is a part of us, you know, moving into the building. And we found that the mechanical fasteners, especially the smaller ones, you could barely see any type of a patch there. You know? So we felt like that was the best approach based on our prior experience already remediating the veneer.
So you haven't really explored another perhaps corner sign as opposed to this one. You're pretty much set on straight and street facade.
Yeah, and every historical photo of the building we have, except for obviously the original construction, we see signs in these locations. But they've covered up the standard oil.
There are additional questions for the petitioner, Mr. Houle.
Hi, Stan Houle. Question in terms of the staff recommendation. Installing those things in the mortar joints where feasible, it's in the recommendation where it's feasible. Is that feasible?
It is. So the terracotta panels, they have intervals, they're different sizes and spacing, but more than accommodating for what we're trying to do. Because this is a very flat, low profile sign, so it's not a heavy load.
Are there additional questions?
I have one additional quick one. What's the width of the mortar joints?
It appears to be roughly a quarter of an inch.
You haven't measured?
We have not gone up on a ladder and measured. Yeah.
Ms. Woodfield, did you have a question?
Thank you. Yes, I'd like to make a recommendation comment, and that is that you do not disturb the chiseled letters of the Standard Oil sign.
Absolutely.
You know, I think that's sort of sacred. You know, if you cover it, it needs to be able to be removed without materially destroying the original sign.
And we agree. Obviously the space that we occupy, and you know, we did not directly purchase the building. The owner of our company did. And we intend to preserve, you know, having the Standard Oil exposed on the other two elevations without any interest of ever covering those up as a part of our occupancy there. So we just were, you know, wanting to emulate what others had done before us.
Just one further comment, and I do think 33 more holes there is pretty excessive. If there's some weight, and maybe you need a little sturdier material that the sign is mounted on, so that you can, it's more rigid and you can use less anchors instead of more. My comment.
Any additional questions? Thank you, Hunter. Is there a member of the public that would like to comment? Please state your name for the record.
Yes, Andrew Jones, Oglethorpe Plan Coalition. I support the staff's recommendation that any attachments be only in the mortar joints. In the past, I served on the Landmarks Committee of Community Board 2 in Manhattan, with jurisdiction over Greenwich Village, Soho, and Tribeca. And in New York City, that is the rule. You can only attach through mortar joints, never through the masonry itself. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Jones. Is there any other member of the public that wishes to speak? Okay, at this time, we will enter into board discussion, and no further comment will be accepted. Mr. Houle, I will start with you.
After the question and answer, period. I agree with the recommendations that are in the staff recommendations.
Thank you, Mr. Houle. Ms. Woodfield.
I don't know that we brought this up earlier. I'm sorry if we didn't, but it's my understanding that the illuminated sign on the side is within the standards of the district. So there's no question about the second side mounted sign. The illuminated sign.
Correct.
Is permissible without any special discussion or approval.
Correct.
Yep. Well, I like the comments that we discussed. I agree with them, only joints in the side. I think definitely try to do fewer of them, fewer attachment points. And I'd say do not disturb the letters in any way. That should be formalized.
Thank you, Ms. Woodfield. Mr. Thompson.
Well, I support staff recommendation. I have a little uneasiness about the wording of the first and number one and number two, that who insures, is that considered a city inspector doing that, or is our historic review staff needs to look over their shoulder to?
I mean, it would just be communication with the petitioner prior to starting the project.
Okay. Well, my point is that somebody's got to watch them do it so they don't.
Yeah, I think that carries true with all recommendations. I think that's true of all recommendations. Is that all? Mr. Higgins?
Higgins, I'm going in a different direction here. I do not think under any circumstances that the Drayton Street sign should be allowed. We have seen previous iterations of this cause permanent and irreparable damage to this very iconic facade. And now we're going to do it again by drilling 33 holes into that facade. There are better alternative signage positions, as you can see right on the screen right now. They could easily just put a corner sign up, cause much less damage to the building and not create another mess. I mean, we have an opportunity here to deny the Drayton Street sign, restore this iconic facade, and do something else. If we go with staff recommendations, they're still going to drill into the facade. They don't know how wide the mortar joints are, and if they're a quarter of an inch, that means they're going to, even if they do hit the mortar joints, they're going to damage the terracotta. I just find this an abomination. Can't be any more clear.
Thank you, Mr. Higgins. I'll go around one more time, Mr. Hull.
Nothing more.
Ms. Woodfield.
Well, I'm sympathetic to the permanent damage that a drill hole could make. And a drill hole, you know, sometimes it's not clean. It has, you know, rough edges. And we haven't really heard what size the holes are. I think if it's a quarter inch, it's the inside of the plug, not the outside of the plug. So I'm sympathetic to the idea of denying this and looking for another direction.
Mr. Thompson.
Well, I guess I agree with Mr. Higgins on this. Was sort of the more clearer point of view than what I was trying to make about ensuring whatever they were posing actually didn't harm the building any more than necessary. So I could see, putting one sign up and the other one down.
Mr. Higgins.
I concur with what was just said.
I'll add my comments on this since they seem to be in opposition. When a sign meets the sign ordinance and they have presented a plan and are willing to use a means that would preserve the historic integrity of the facade in the building, and it is certainly allowable and preferred that if affixing to a historic building that the mortar joints are used, and if they are willing to do that, I just don't see a grounds for denying it.
Secretary, the interior standards. Damage, permanent destruction and damage of historic fabric.
I guess I disagree or not, I guess I disagree. I disagree that it's permanent destruction of historic fabric. But those are my comments. I'll now entertain a motion.
Higgins. I move the Savannah Historic District Board of Review with regard to file number 24-004393, which is 110 East President Street, deny the request to install one sign on the Drayton Street elevation and approve the installation of an illuminated wall sign on the President Street elevation, with staff recommendations.
Mr. Higgins, can you clarify your motion? If you're moving to deny the sign on Drayton Street, staff recommendations wouldn't necessarily apply.
When they're installing the illuminated sign on East President Street, they talk about mortar joints.
So deny the Drayton Street sign and then approve the second sign with the staff recommendation.
Yes.
Okay. So the motion on the floor is to deny the petition for the sign on the Drayton Street facade and approve the second sign with the staff recommendations. Do I have a second?
Woodfield, I'll second the motion.
Thank you, Ms. Woodfield. Mr. Houle, how do you vote?
Nay.
Ms. Woodfield?
Yes.
Mr. Thompson?
Yes.
Mr. Higgins?
Yes.
The ayes have it. The Drayton Street sign is denied. The secondary sign is approved with staff recommendation. Next item up on the regular agenda is the petition of J. Elder Studio, file number 24-006109, COA 26-28 West Broughton Street.
Thank you, Madam Chair, members of the board. This is Caitlin Chamberlain again presenting this project. So the applicant is requesting approval for rehab and alterations of the storefront design and entrance locations at the connected buildings of 26 and 28 West Broughton Street. So the scope of work includes the demolition of non-historic storefronts to install new storefronts and the demolition of a non-historic awning on the front. There is also a request to reopen several currently sealed window openings at the rear lane elevation and to remove a non-functioning non-historic metal fire escape, turning those two door openings back into windows. So just for some historical background, 26 and 28 West Broughton Street were built in 1878, but only 26 West Broughton Street is a contributing resource. In the 20th century, 28 West Broughton Street underwent major renovations, including the stucco facade and change in window shapes, and also is likely the reason for the non-contributing status. The rear of the site still retains some of its historic integrity. Both buildings were altered to accommodate first-story commercial storefronts. These buildings are part of Lyons Block, which also includes the building that houses the Paris Market. Lyons Block was constructed in 1878 for John Lyons, a local grocer. Presently, the block is visually separated into three buildings by the treatment of the facades. There's just some present day photos of what we're currently seeing. This is the demolition plans, just showing that it's literally just the non-historic storefronts that are proposed to change. So there's the elevation of that and then the rear with the sealed windows. Because there are some existing original windows on the front facade, the applicant is proposing to also replace the rear ones that are sealed up with the same style, just custom made to match those. The replacement storefronts, just to share the site plan here. So on 28, which is the non-historic building, there will be one recessed entry here on an aluminum storefront, and then there will be a wood storefront on the one next door, with two recessed entries on either side. just walk you through those elevation drawings of the proposed designs, the front and the rear. And with that, staff recommends to approve the request to install two new storefront configurations on the front elevations to reopen several sealed window openings to install windows on the rear elevation, as well as removal of the non-functional fire escapes and the conversion of two rear doors back into windows for the connecting properties of 26 and 28 West Broughton Street as requested, because the work is visually compatible and meets the standards. Thank you. I'll be happy to take your questions.
Thank you, Caitlin. Are there questions for staff? Okay, thank you. Would that petitioner please come forward and state your name for the record?
Good afternoon, Jerome Aldo with J. Aldo Studio. I want to thank staff for working with us because as we explored this, we found a few different things that were quite interesting, including finding the previous openings and all those windows. We're looking forward to getting this building rehabilitated, and we agree with all of the staff comments, so we hope that you approve this moving forward. Any questions for me?
Thank you, Mr. Elder. Are there questions for the petitioner?
I'm just going to bring up a general one, and I understand you want to remove the fire escape.
So, yes.
Do you have the approval? I mean, you don't need that as a fire exit.
No, we do not. And we are adding, if I can actually scroll up and you'll see, we're adding an interior secondary stair from the upper floors. So there are two doors on the first floor that we are included in the petition as being new. And it's these two rear doors right here. Well, one of them is existing, we're just doing the same in kind, and then on the opposite side.
Were there additional questions for the petitioner? Thank you, Mr. Elder.
Thank you.
Is there a member of the public that would like to comment? Just state your name for the record.
Ellie Isaacs, Director of Preservation for Historic Savannah Foundation. HSF's ARC is concerned about the alterations being proposed to the storefront at 28 West Broughton. Although currently listed as a non-contributing building, the storefront and alterations to the building represent an important layer of our recent past that is consistently being erased and threatened in our city. With its unique jewel boxes intact, the storefront is unlike any other on Broughton Street. However, we do want to be on record in support of the additional proposed work to the lane of the building and the storefront at 26 West Broughton.
Thank you, Ms. Isaacs. Is there another member of the public that wishes to speak? No one online. Okay, at this time, we will enter into board discussion and no further public comment will be accepted. Mr. Higgins, I will start with you.
No comment at this time.
Thank you, Mr. Higgins. Mr. Thompson?
No comment.
Thank you, Mr. Thompson. Ms. Woodfield?
No comment. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Woodfield. Mr. Houle?
No comments.
All right. Given that there weren't any first time around, I will not go around a second time, but I will entertain a motion.
Madam Chair?
Mr. Houle?
I move that the Savannah Downtown Historic Board of Review approve the petition 24006109 COA at 2628 West Broughton Street as requested, because the work is visually incompatible and meets the standards.
Thank you, Mr. Houle. There's a motion on the floor to approve. Do I have a second?
Higgins, second.
Mr. Higgins, I will also start with you. How do you vote? Mr. Thompson?
Aye.
Ms. Woodfield?
Aye.
Mr. Houle?
Aye.
The ayes have it. That petition is approved. The next item up on the regular agenda is the petition of Stephen Boddick of Savannah, Inc., file number 24-005463 COA for 405 East Hull Street.
Good afternoon. Jonathan Mellon, Director of Historic Preservation at MPC. You probably all remember this from last month, but I wanted to first of all start out with just kind of orienting you. So this is the property in question. It's directly located to the east of the police station, and directly to the north is the new apartment complex that has been constructed. This is a non-contributing building. Here's a photo of it. The entire block was constructed as one development. As you can see, these buildings back up to each other. They abut each other. So there are no rear yards. There's no lane running through here. As you all may recall, the applicant is proposing a rooftop addition, a fourth floor under zoning. And if we can pull here, here's some more photos. We took a deep dive into the history of the area. Unfortunately, the historic fabric on almost all the surrounding blocks was lost, particularly to the east. So there are, it's surrounded by non-contributing buildings in the area. And what I'm going to do here is just quickly, because the applicant sent some revised plans, I want to pull up for you all. So again, this the series of row houses, again, all attached. As you can see, wanted to point this out, all the roofs have a parapet, which obscures the view of the flat roofs. This is the property in question right here with the red door. And what is being proposed here is a rooftop addition. You can see right here, can zoom in a little bit, and then a deck. As you can see here in the project team, and we'll walk you through this, what the applicant has changed since this was last before you, they've pulled it back, I believe, 1 feet 6 inches from both the north and the west. That was over some concerns that were raised about the potential visibility of the railing for the deck. Staff has been out to the site numerous times. The applicant has also included, and they will walk you through it, sightline studies, that the proposed addition itself would not be visible from any street or lane, which is what is how we look at additions under the ordinance. The applicant, this is the proposed, let me zoom out a little bit again. So again, you have existing and proposed, but as we know with elevation drawings, they're very flat. This is set back quite a distance. It would not be visible from the street. And I know there was a request at the last meeting to see how this would be in terms of the entire block. So again, this would be set back. This is that new development that I was talking about that's directly to the north. So the subject property is back here. So there are no views of this proposed addition. So I'm going to get to the meat. The ordinance specifically does not allow roof decks on front elevations. And I know there's been a lot of discussion about Sorry about that. So we wanted to quickly, because we are always happy to have a lot of public input. And as you saw, we have a policy that whenever public comment is made, we record that and we post it on the website. So as you can see, if you go on the MPC website, I believe we received 50 comments on this project from members of the public. And there were a lot of questions about the criteria for special exception. So the applicant is requesting a special exception because, as I noted, the ordinance specifically says roof decks cannot be on a front facade. So as you can see here in section 3.12.7, when reviewing a special exception request, A finding shall be made by the Planning Commission, the Historic Preservation Commission, or the Savannah Downtown Historic District Board of Review, you all, for each of the criteria listed below. And there are two criteria that are listed in the ordinance. I'm just going to read these for also for the sake of the public who's here. A, whether the use for which the special exception is being considered would be located, operated, and maintained in a manner in conformance with the goals, policies, and objectives of the comprehensive plans and provisions of this ordinance. B, whether the special exception would not be detrimental to the public interest, health, safety, welfare, function, and appearance of the adjacent uses or general vicinity. So when staff was looking at this, if you went through our staff report, we were looking at it through the lens of the historic district overlay, and whether or not this proposed addition met the criteria in terms of architectural design, whether it would have a negative impact architecturally on the downtown historic district on this row of non-contributing buildings. As we've noted, the proposed addition will not be visible from any public street or lane, with the railing being pulled back, and I don't want to jump ahead to the recommendation, the railing will also not be visible. In addition, as I noted, there's a parapet that encloses the roof presently, as it does on all the row houses in this development. So the deck itself will not be visible. Many of the comments that we've received have related to the use, and there's really no way for staff to provide guidance to you all on the use of a property. As you know, we've said to you many, many times, that's not an area that we really weigh in on, whether, and there's really no way to know what the new owner of this building is going to use their roof for. And we have no way to guide you in terms of, you know, conditions on matters such as use, noise, public safety. We are not, the city of Savannah is tasked with that, and they do an excellent job in reviewing, you know, public safety, you know, fire safety, all those things that really we have no way of weighing in on. So let me just go down here. With that, our recommendation is to approve the installation of the head house and roof deck at 405 East Hall Street. We do have a few conditions. Provide additional information on the proposed color palette for the head house, penthouse, and roof deck to ensure standards are met. Again, additional information on the railing to ensure the standards are met. And also a little more clarification on the proposed location of the relocated rooftop-mounted HVAC units in order to ensure they are screened from view and meet the standards. But again, to kind of get to the meat and potatoes of this, the special exception. Sorry. So as I said, the ordinance is quite clear. It says pergolas and roof decks shall not be permitted on the street facade. Now, as we discussed a little bit during the pre-meeting, it's a little bit vague about what that is saying, but in our interpretation, that means on a street facade that you cannot have a roof deck. This is the front facade, so they do need a special exception in our view. We are recommending approval with two conditions. We are recommending that it be pulled back from the front, which is the north, and the side west elevations to ensure that the proposed railing would not be visible. And also, secondarily, even though we do not really have any review authority over temporary items, there is a visual impact when folks add umbrellas and planters and things on top of these roof decks. And so by pulling it back, that then improves the visual compatibility of the overall project. The second is that any proposed exterior lighting would have to be reviewed by you all to ensure that the standards are met in terms of scale, materiality, and light source type. And the condition includes lighting that would be visible from the public right of way shall not be permitted. So if they want to have some wall mounted, you know, light fixtures on this head house at the rear just to provide safety, but staff would not be supportive of freestanding lights on this roof that could be visible from the street. And what we were recommending, I'm going to pull back, if I go here, a little bit different than what the applicant was recommending. Just going to go back to our staff report. Sorry, staff reports get a little long at times. I'll just zoom in here so you can see what we're talking about here. So I know it can be a little confusing. So right here where my cursor is, that's Hull Street. This is the front. And so again, it's our interpretation of the zoning ordinance that they do need a special exception. This is this rear pop-up. So this will not be visible. But what we were recommending from staff, because we're always concerned again about this potential visual impact. So we're recommending that it be pulled back 4 feet from the front, which is the north elevation, and 2 feet from the side. As I noted, the applicant, I believe, is proposing 1'6" from each. Staff felt this was more appropriate in terms of ensuring the minimization of any potential visual impact of this project on the area. So we are here to answer any questions you have. We also, I know there are a lot of members of the public, I believe, who are here to talk about this. And we are also joined by our colleague, Bridget Liddy from the City of Savannah. There have been a number of questions about STVRs, which, to be totally candid, we are not qualified to answer. But I know Bridget is here. Should, you know, that you want to have, if you all have any questions on anything related to that.
Thank you, Jonathan. I did want to bring up something that was discussed in pre-meeting in regards to the criteria for evaluating and approving special exceptions and variances. That the language that is used in our code is in direct conflict with what the scope and purview of this board is on regular decisions. So where typically this board is to evaluate things on the appropriateness and what is visible in the built environment, the variance is the opposite of that. So it's a little bit confusing for the public and for the board when we're told to evaluate our visual and our built environment, and then the criteria for granting a special exception or a variance involves use and pulls in other health and safety, the well-being of neighbors, which is very difficult for us to evaluate and enforce. So we understand that we're not going to rewrite what's written, but that is something that I know I would like to have looked at for the future revisions of the code, because it's kind of putting us in a tough situation. So just wanted that noted. And then other questions for staff.
I have two. One is pretty simple. You state in the staff comments, lighting that would be visible from the public right of way shall not be permitted. What if they put up, the clear strung up from one side of the deck to the other lights that are not permanent, but
again, if it's a temporary, we have a challenge of having any authority over it. But I believe that's also why we were recommending it be pulled back, the deck 4 feet from the front, so that they wouldn't actually, any lighting that they would have would be set back at least 4 feet. And then there's the parapet, as I said, so probably 5 feet. From the front, which would help with the visibility, and then also from the side. But temporary lighting, we don't have, that we have no control over that.
The other thing is, in the course of this, have you heard from any of the direct adjacent neighbors who have adjacent townhomes on either side or in back with regard to?
I did have a conversation with the adjacent owner to the east, I believe it is, who I believe said he might be joining this meeting virtually, who did not have any concerns about the addition itself or the deck. He was more concerned about water runoff and methods of construction to make sure that he had recently put on a new roof on his house, and he wanted to make sure his roof would not be damaged. But that's the only that I know of someone who's, but I believe we, there's a letter from one of the owners of the house behind this, or I don't know if it's directly behind, that person may be here, objecting to this project. And we've heard from, as I said, you know, 50 folks. I would say it'd be fair to characterize of the 50 we received, I think there are two in support and 48 in opposition. So just to.
Yeah. My only concern is those people that are directly impacted, you know, by this project, if they support or object to it.
Yeah, I like I said, I believe the owner of the property behind it who was opposed to it is here. The gentleman I spoke to on the phone may be joining virtually. I don't know that if he will. But again, as our chair was noting, we normally don't, when reviewing a project, you know, we're looking at this through the overlay district. We normally don't take, you know, that into consideration with projects.
Are there any additional questions for staff?
One question that I had on the railing that is now set back to some number of feet, is there proposed in that there would be a gate that would essentially let people use the rest of the
It would not that I'm aware of, no. It would just be a railing. So the idea is they would not be accessing the rest of the roof. Good question.
Any additional questions for staff? Thank you, Jonathan. Would the petitioner please come forward and state your name for the record?
Okay. Thank you. Hi, I'm the petitioner, Ashley Field, representing Stephen Bodick. Good afternoon and greetings. I don't really have anything to add about what they're proposing. I'm in agreement. I don't think it's a problem of moving back that 4 feet that they're asking and bringing in those rails. We have no problem with that. Because of the controversy, I did read all of the comments. I know there's a questionable portion of this about relevancy to what the board governs. I will say, because I'm in historic renovation and restoration, I'm sympathetic to it. I did do some research. I did reach out to find out if this actually had a short-term vacation rental permit because it had been listed in so many of the emails that I read. It does not. The previous owner had one and then revoked it out. The new owner has never applied and doesn't plan on it. This is going to be a residence, as I stated originally when we met. And I kind of wanted that noted. Personally, because this is what I do for a living, I'm kind of wary and I feel for you guys having to do what you have to do on this, because if you make judgment based on usage, if this property sells or usage of how it goes instead of on the actual questionability of what we're trying to add, this addition, or be it a renovation, you would have to apply that across the board, to be fair. And I would hate to be in your shoes today. I would be happy to answer any questions you guys have for me. I will do my best to try to convey every bit of knowledge I have on this.
Thank you. Are there questions for the petitioner? Thank you.
Thank you, ma'am.
Is there a member of the public that would like to comment? We ask that you please come forward, state your name for the record, and keep your comments to 3 minutes or less. And just because of the volume of public comment that is included in the public record, if your comments are in line with someone who has gone before you, we ask that you yield your time and simply say, you know, me too, so that we're not going through 50 people saying the same thing. I'll let you state your name for the record.
Thank you. I'm Debbie Bassnett. I live at 406 East McDonough Street, directly adjacent behind that unit. I do have concerns about
this rooftop deck for a number of reasons. I was only just recently made aware that it does not have an STVR license, but I do have a unit with STVR license directly to the east of me and one over from the west of me. Should this become a precedent set, I can expect rooftop decks surrounding my third floor master bedroom with these, you know, the people that are here to enjoy life to the fullest in Savannah, possibly creating a lot of noise, as has already happened in our ward, Crawford Ward, and I think that our ward captain is going to speak to that. My other concerns are my husband brought up a concern about some security issues with people having full access to the deck and all our units having roof hatches. I have concerns about the construction because all these units are known to have some roof issues, and I heard that the neighbor to the east has already just had their roof replaced. We have also, we've just had some water repairs, so I have concerns about permeation of shared wall space and how this might affect some of our units, as well as I did note that there was a mini split on the back of that head house that would be directly to our unit, so I would have concerns about how that would that cross that wall? Cause it looks like that the building is directly on that, little like short wall up there. So I have concerns about how that would affect our unit. I 100%, because I live in one of these units, we have very limited storage and outdoor space. So I really appreciate the fact that they want to increase their outdoor space, but I'm not sure that this is a precedent of how we need to, allow that to happen. I have a lot of concerns, but sorry, I do have to leave too, so for another meeting. So I wanted to be sure to get that spoken. But I would definitely be willing to, you know, talk to you guys as the owner of the property, which I wish they would have come to some of us neighbors first to talk to us about how this would affect us. So, but you know how to reach me. So, okay.
Thank you. Just state your name for the record.
Thank you, Madam Chairman. My name is Steve Edwards, and I represent the Downtown Neighborhood Association. And we strongly oppose granting this exception to the city's general prohibition on facade-facing roof decks. Others have and will discuss the negative effect that this roof deck will have on the welfare of the surrounding neighborhood, but I'm going to focus on an equally important fundamental reason for denying the application. The reason is right in the name of what's being requested. They want a special exception. Now, as you know, in their wisdom, the drafters of the ordinance include a prohibition against roof decks on the street facade of buildings. They started with the principle that roof decks on the street facade, like the one being proposed here, are undesirable and generally forbidden. Now, you do have a power to grant an exception to that general principle, but it needs to be a special case. And this case is certainly not special. The lack of outdoor space available has been mentioned as a reason, but that surely can't be sufficient. There are over a dozen virtually identical properties on the block, all with a similar amount of outdoor space that is not inhibited. What has been a robust market for these properties since they were constructed, including this property, which was just sold earlier this year without the requested space. I have to point out that many new and historic properties downtown, including my own, have not much more outdoor space than what this property already has available. And at this point, I would paraphrase the wise words of one of the members of this board. If you want a house with more outdoor space, buy a house with more outdoor space. If this special exception is granted, though, it's difficult to see how you would distinguish all of those identical properties and so many other properties with limited outdoor space in the historic district if they were to request their own special exception. The prohibition against roof decks on the street facade has to mean something. Granting a special exception in this case would essentially destroy the prohibition and allow similar roof decks on each of those adjacent properties and indeed throughout the historic district. It would ignore and destroy the general prohibition, which would be rendered meaningless. A special exception has to be special. There needs to be a compelling basis for distinguishing the case from the general rule. That's clearly not present here, and the special exception has to be denied. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Edwards. Sure. Just make sure you state your name for the record.
Hi, I'm actually here to support the approval of the deck for this building.
Ma'am, sorry, just before you continue, can you state your name for the record?
Joyce Persani.
Thank you, Joyce.
And I'm here to support the approval of this deck. Mostly, I took the effort to come today because in the original call that was put out by this group to invite people to comment against it, one of the things was that it was going to be a short-term vacation rental. And if a decision is made here because it's a short-term vacation rental or possibly a short-term vacation rental, that affects me. I own 6 short-term vacation rentals. I recovered 6 buildings that were in pretty bad shape. I've restored them. I've operated them for 10 years. I've never had a complaint by a neighbor. I've never had anybody come and stay with me that even broke the glass. So I have a really good experience with short-term. It absolutely improved my neighborhood. I employ 5 people. And there are 1,600 short-term vacation rentals in the historic district. The city has bent over backwards to accommodate the Downtown Neighborhood Association with being able to complain about short-terms, up to and including recently having a 24-hour-a-day employee available to answer a phone for a real-time complaint about a short-term at the city's expense. To say that this is a potential problem with noise, anybody that wants to shut down a short-term vacation rental only has to complain 3 times with a legitimate complaint and the license is pulled. To bring this kind of argument here in the long run could affect me. If I want to build a deck on one of my properties, there's nothing that says, when I sell these, more than likely I will sell them to be single family homes. But it could possibly set a precedent if a decision's made here. Because it's a short term or potentially a short term, it affects me. So I wanted to say that because I think all property owners who have a building that want to make it a law office or a doctor's office or a long term rental or a short term rental, there shouldn't be special rules against short term. So I'm just hoping that you approve the deck. And that's because I think at some point I might want to build a deck. And I appreciate your time.
Thank you.
My name is Artis Wood. I am chair of Scenic Chatham. You've already alluded to the fact that we have to talk about visual, not audio, but considering that we also should talk about health, safety, and well-being, that is a fuzzy thing, and I think audio is certainly important. With regard to short-term rental, people that own a house that aren't renting their house for a short-term stay can still make a lot of noise or cause problems against the safety and well-being of their neighbors. I want to point out that you have conditions you listed, such as the lighting and the color and accessibility and the railing, and don't walk beyond the railing. As chair of Scenic Chatham, I look all the time at hundreds of violations of codes. And we have come to find that the code enforcement people say that they are only able to provide complaint-driven only responses to these problems. And so if you put something in that is questionable or problematic, and you maybe know that you have some access to questioning the violation of color or lighting or whatever, then you have to be the bad guy to call and complain, and then you get arguments with neighbors and all. So I think we must be realistic when we talk about that sort of thing. And finally, with regard to complaint-driven only, I'm one of the few people that might have called, although not lately, about something you see on the screen, and that's these garbage cans. These folks were given a place to put their car and to put their garbage cans. And most of the people in all these areas have already violated that by putting their garbage cans out on the street and their cars 24/7. That is clearly a violation. How in the world can you say we have a beautiful city when you go down a street and all you're looking at are these bright yellow topped garbage cans? So let's be understanding of what we're dealing with and where the nose under the tent could carry us where we don't want to go. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Wood. Is there another member of the public who wishes to speak?
Andrew Jones, Oglethorpe Plan Coalition. Ms. Nguyen, you raised important points. We provided you a legal memorandum as to your purview regarding special exceptions. You should understand that your purview is different in approving a COA from approving a special exception. You have specific authority and obligations with respect to approving a COA and a completely different set with respect to approving the special exception. You must follow the ordinance. That is your obligation. Any concept that somehow it's not in your purview is a fiction. The ordinance is very clear. The language is clear. That's your purview and your obligation. The Oglethorpe Plan Coalition opposes the request for a special exception. And while we agree that STVRs are a huge problem and they exacerbate this issue, our position stands independent of the STVR issue. The special exception request fails the second criterion because it is detrimental to the public interest and welfare of the neighborhood. We agree with the MPC staff that they're not able to evaluate that detriment for you. But today, you're hearing the evidence from the public, from the immediate neighbors, of the nuisance that party decks cause in the historic district. Noise that emanates from these decks, especially late night parties, is detrimental to the welfare of the neighborhood and diminishes the livability of our homes, and I do know that personally. While the current residents of 405 East Hull may not themselves cause any problems, the deck is permanent, and one does not know who will occupy the property after these residents leave. Moreover, the Hull Street address is part of a large group of identical buildings that occupy the entire block. Permission granted to one owner to have a rooftop deck will allow the others to do the same. And so we actually encourage the applicant to withdraw its application. As these decks proliferate, the owners who are applying here today are going to lose their privacy. They're going to find their own home unlivable as late night parties on their immediate neighbor's decks, some of which are active STVRs at this moment. But late night parties on their immediate neighbor's decks make it impossible for them, these applicants, to reside and to sleep in their own beds. If they do not withdraw, however, we request that you deny this very, very ill-advised request for a special exception. And we would also note that in the past, for example, in the case of 336 Barnard, the MPC argued for approval based upon that second criterion, saying that the entrance requested in that case eliminated so-called dead zones. So you've ruled on this before. If in that case, that second criterion was used for the applicant's benefit, if you're saying that you can't use the second criterion now because it's detrimental to the applicant, then that's an impermissible and biased application of the ordinance. So again, please deny this special exception request. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Jones. Is there another member of the public who wishes to speak? Thank you. Please state your name for the record.
Yes, my name is Paul Kobe. I live at 531 East Perry Street. I'm the ward captain for the Downtown Neighborhood Association for Crawford Ward. The subject property is in Crawford Ward. As I said, I live at 531 East Perry Street. All of the properties adjacent to me from 531 to 539 all have street-facing rooftop terraces. These units were built in 1999 prior to the onset of the STVR craze. So we've got five units in a row in Crawford Square, all having rooftop decks facing the street. While initially those properties were not STVR, two of them today are non-occupied STVR properties. And noise from these two properties has been a problem for as long as I've lived in my home. Right now, there are over 50 letters entered into the public record, and all but one, and you've heard from that individual, oppose granting the exception, the special exception. For a number of reasons have been offered up. You've heard some of them. The main issue is noise emanating from a proposed rooftop deck. Among the letters submitted in opposition to granting this special exception are property owners on both sides of the East Perry Street STVR properties, along with many properties locating directly across the street, all beneficiaries of late night party noise from these STVRs. Further, letters have been submitted from residents, and you heard from one of them, closer to the 405 Hull Street property, all objecting to and testifying to the experience of other late night rooftop deck noise. All of these objections come from Crawford Ward residents citing real ongoing issues from non-owner occupied STVR decks. In other words, these comments are not about an expression of fear that we might have noise. This is an expression of an ongoing existing problem. And granting this special exception is only going to further exacerbate the problem that we have in the neighborhood in Crawford Square, or around Crawford Square in the ward. Let me address the one letter that was entered into the public record in support of approving the request. That letter cited the fairness and respect for individual property rights. Essentially, this letter frames the support for approving the special exception around the right of the single property owner. This person is absolutely correct in viewing that this matter is a property rights issue. However, they fail to recognize the property rights of the residents of the neighborhood. Do the rights of the individual outweigh the many residents surrounding the proposed project? The answer to this question lies in the language of the ordinance. The ordinance requires the consideration of the public interest and welfare. This language would suggest that the individual property rights are not outweighed by the property rights of the many. Please do not grant this exception.
Thank you.
Ellie Isaacs, Director of Preservation for the Historic Savannah Foundation. As stated during the last meeting, and given the site's context, the question of compatibility is HSF's ARC's main concern, as this would set a precedent along this row. Given that MPC staff review indicates that that by right the penthouse is allowed, but the roof deck facing on the street facade is not, regardless if it is visible from the right-of-way. Sounds like these sections within the ordinance need to be reviewed and reassessed in order to coordinate with each other.
Thank you, Ms. Isaacs. Is there another member of the public who wishes to speak?
Good afternoon. My name is Eli Lurie. I'd just like to bring up the issue of special exemption. This is a non-contributing block. The block across the street is non-contributing. A lot of the blocks around this block are non-contributing. And so this property right here in the bottom left corner is directly behind this property right here, which has a very similar head house and roof deck condition with a very prominent railing that is visible. Directly north to this is the very large infill project that just got completed recently. And that project, that project has balconies and what I would possibly consider a roof deck situation along the entire opposite side of the street. This street right of way is only 22.5 feet wide. So these decks are basically coplanar directly across from what we're proposing. So there's already a precedent on this block based on this large scale development on the street that there are outdoor spaces at that level that were recently approved. And that is basically true for all of these blocks in the surrounding area where there's new large scale infill that has pretty visible, roof deck situations. And as the drawings show, this roof deck is not visible from any right of way, whether it be East McDonough Street or East Hull Street. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Lowry. Is there another member of the public who wishes to speak? Would the petitioner like to respond to public comment?
I definitely have questions as far as the complaints that have come in and the comments that have been made referring to noise, although there are quite a lot of rooftop decks throughout the historic section of Savannah regardless. I feel like using that, using short-term vacation rental, which is a totally different subject outside of doing any type of renovation or addition in the historic district, it should not play into it. If it does, it has to apply to everything, whether it has a short-term rental or not. I realize that the public is trying their best to not let this pass, but I just don't feel like there's enough grounds, personally. From what I've seen, the decks have built downtown. Rooftop decks are a new way of life. These people, we live in an inner city area where you just don't have a lot of outside area. You look at the majority of most cities, and this is pretty common. It's become the latest thing. I just don't want this to be about a short-term rental issue. That is not what this is about. This is about these people wanting to put a deck on the home that they're going to move into and live in. And I just want it stated as such. I do appreciate it. Thank you.
Thank you. At this time, we will enter into board discussion and no further public comment will be accepted.
I have one quick question for Jonathan before we move into board discussion.
Sure.
It was mentioned that there is a mini split condenser hanging off the back of this head house.
I wasn't aware of that. Maybe, yes, I'll call up the architect who's designing the project.
There's a mini split that's mounted on the inside, but it's not externally mounted. So there's nothing on the outside. That would be down with the other two.
So the condenser will be with the other.
That, it'll be with the other condensers that are shown on the side right here.
Okay.
Good question.
Anything else before we enter into board discussion? I mean, we can discuss it during board discussion. Mr. Houle, I'll start with you.
Well, I appreciate the confidence that I can start. when I first looked at this, my whole thought was, well, it seems to meet the historic review criteria and the ordinance, and so there's not much we can do about it. And then, as everyone else in this room, except for me, obviously figured out that the special exception provides guidance. And believe it or not, I actually read the guidance. Well, it's not guidance, it's the ordinance. And it says the use for which special exception is being considered would be located, operated, and maintained in a manner in conformance with the goals. So for us as the board looking at the historic review ordinance, we've got some pretty close parameters. But where you go into this special exception, it opens it up pretty wide, and in you know certainly including all of the comments that are here, it's made for a much tougher decision than I thought I was going to have this afternoon.
Thank you, Mr. Houle. Ms. Woodfield?
I agree. We have, as you say, a box that we have to view things through, and we're now getting asked with the special exception to think more broadly about goals and policies and public health, interest, function, welfare of the community, not of the individual, not just of the physical world, but of the neighborhood and the, you know, the well-being of the people around you, not just of your own desire to have something. And I feel like this is a big precedent, this project. And I don't find that it is consistent with the goals of having the historic district as a peaceful oasis that reflects kind of this, you know, 2 square miles or something of kind of a different place and time where we're not bombarded by everything modern and everything like any fad in any city. We care that this is a historic district. And, you know, there are some goals to keep it historic. And I do feel part of that is the you know, the quiet, peaceful, you know, community that doesn't have a lot of, you know, this exception of which will become a common thing. If we put this rooftop here, it does become a precedent that we can't go back from. So again, the ordinance may not be written that well, but I think it does give us the option to say this is a Pandora's box that could be opened, would be opened, and we would have a hard time coming back from it. So those are my comments.
Thank you, Ms. Woodfield. I'll add my own comments. I do want to just clarify Section A, when it talks about the goals and objectives, those are not abstract. Those are the goals and objectives of the comprehensive plan. So that is the comprehensive plan is a pretty sturdy document. So that's what it's referring to, not what we feel are our own personal goals for the historic district. I do want to just reiterate that the second part of the ordinance that lays out the conditions under which a special exception can be granted is where I'm getting hung up. And I think that's the part of the ordinance that should be looked at because it's in, again, direct conflict with what the purview of this board normally is. And when you take the ordinance and read it as it's written today, which is what we're required to do, a special exception can't be detrimental to public interest, health, safety, welfare, function, and appearance of the adjacent uses or the general vicinity. And I think that we've heard that this, in fact, does not meet that criteria. Whether or not we agree with the way the ordinance is written, I think that it is what it is, and we have to make our decision based on the ordinance that is in front of us. Mr. Thompson.
Well, I'm perfectly comfortable with voting in favor of this, and that the use is a rooftop use, recreational thing, which certainly somewhere in that huge comprehensive plan, which I helped write at one time, there's something for everybody in that. And I don't see any harm to the public interest. Certainly the case of short-term rentals can be a problem if it applies to this type of thing. But I have a big problem that there's about a dozen places within a block of this building where somebody could come in and do the same thing. So you could have another dozen rooftop things if we approve this exception. Don't have a problem with this exception. It's what we coming down the pike if this goes in. At least it could come down the pike, if you will. So.
Mr. Higgins.
Higgins, I concur with what was just said. Sometimes I feel like this board is tasked with cleaning up past exceptions and precedents that were set that go contrary to what the rules are. And I keep going back to pergolas and roof decks shall not be permitted on the street facade. That was written for a reason. If we go ahead and approve a special exception for this one, it opens it up to anyone else doing the same thing if we want to stick by what this board does. We set precedent. And I am not comfortable at this point in opening up a Pandora's box of roof decks on the front of buildings. The whole short-term vacation rental thing, that's conjecture. You know, we don't know that this is going to be a short-term vacation rental, but there are vacation rentals in the same complex. I keep going back to the sentence, pergolas and roof decks should not be permitted on the street facade. I think that basically says it all right there. No, it should not be. So I don't personally object to roof decks. I kind of enjoy them, but that was written for a reason. And I think we as a body need to stick with what was written.
Thank you, Mr. Higgins. I'll go around one more time. Mr. Houle.
I did have a question for Jonathan. Because this motion that a recommendation by the staff was approve and approve, but if you deny, if the motion that the committee made denied the special exception, then the approval above would be moot. Or do we need to deny both of them?
That's up to you. I mean, you could approve the addition at the rear. They would not have a roof deck. And I don't know what the city's requirements would be in terms of code. If there was not a deck out there without a railing, whether they would still be allowed to have the doors that they were going to have to access the deck. But you could say... we're fine with them putting a little pop-up at the rear if they just want to have a little more space and deny the deck, or you could deny the whole thing. It's really up to you.
Ms. Woodfield?
No further comments.
The way that I'm reading this is if this board decides to deny the special exception, that would be for the roof deck on the front facade, so they could reapply with the addition and a roof deck on the rear. It would just have to be redesigned, or is that not accurate?
Correct. The ordinance only says, as noted here, shall not be permitted on the street facade. So if they wanted to put a roof deck on the rear, and again, we need to have some further discussions with the city about what is, you know, where's the threshold before you're on the front facade, the street facade, or the not street facade? Like, how far setback is that? There's no clear definition of what that is. But you are correct. If this were located, say, if all they had was a little mechanical penthouse, what I would refer to, or excuse me, not mechanical, but a penthouse that provided access to the roof, and there was a deck on the rear of this, they wouldn't need a special exception. But again, we need to talk with our partners with the city about clarification about where that line is in terms of on the front or the rear.
Thank you. Mr. Thompson.
Well, I keep going in my mind back to what Mr. Higgins was referring to, is that they're not supposed to be facing the street. And seems pretty clear if there's a way to design the rooftop thing so it's not facing the street. I don't know. In my mind, I was thinking of something, but it's not for this discussion. But so I agree with Mr. Higgins and maybe others that have made a comment like that.
Thank you, Mr. Thompson. Mr. Higgins?
No further comment.
All right. At this time, I will entertain a motion.
Madam Chair.
A very unconfident sounding Mr. Houle. The floor is yours.
I appreciate the empathy. I move that the Savannah Downtown Historic Board of Review deny the petition 240054-63 at 405 East Hall Street. Denied the, based on, let's see, where else are we going? Because the project is not visually compatible and meet the standards. And I move that the Historic Board of Review deny the special exemption from the standard that pergolas and roof decks shall not be permitted on the street facade because they are considered to be detrimental to the public interest, health, safety, welfare, function, et cetera, et cetera.
Thank you, Mr. Houle. There is a motion on the floor to deny the petition in both respects, the special exception because it doesn't meet the standards and the head house, penthouse, roof deck because it doesn't meet the standards. Do I have a second?
Thompson, second.
Thank you, Mr. Thompson. Mr. Houle, how do you vote?
Aye.
Ms. Woodfield?
Aye.
Mr. Thompson?
Aye.
Mr. Higgins?
Aye.
The ayes have it. That petition is denied. Next up on the regular agenda is the petition of James Burnsid, file number 24-005465 COA for 110 Ann Street, an illuminated sign or signs.
Good afternoon. So again, the applicant is requesting it's actually one single illuminated sign and this wall sign as well as a non-illuminated projecting sign. This application was heard last month. The board voted to continue it because the applicant was not present. Projecting sign again will not be illuminated. Overall, it meets the standards. The applicant just needs to confirm that it meets a minimum of 8 feet above the ground. If it's not met, design should be readjusted or a special exception request should be applied for. With regards to the illuminated sign, overall it meets the standards with the exception of illumination. The zoning district does allow for illumination, but because the sign is opposite residential units, it cannot be illuminated. Just as a note, staff did reach out to the city about this project and several others that we have in regards to illumination. A variance request can be issued for this if the board deems it necessary, but unfortunately we did not determine this until after placards were posted, so the applicant could not request it for this meeting, but that is an option if the board deems it appropriate. So with that, staff recommends approval of the one wall sign and the one projecting sign at 110 Ann Street with the following conditions to be met prior to work taking place because the work is otherwise visually compatible meets the standards. First is to change the wall sign so that it's either externally illuminated or has no illumination at all, or apply for a variance request to be heard by HDBR, as well as to confirm that the projecting sign is no less than 8 feet above the pedestrian walkway. With that, does the board have any questions?
Thank you. Are there questions for staff on this one, Mr. Thompson?
Is the applicant on board with condition one regarding illumination from external source?
I did talk briefly with the applicant about this, and it sounded like he is still requesting the internal illumination, even though we're recommending that be removed.
Is that because the sign's already made?
If it's a question for the applicant is with us, so. Are there any other questions for staff? I didn't mean to cut you off, Mr. Thompson. Was that your only question for staff? Okay.
Thank you, Kelly. If any questions.
Would the applicant please come forward and state your name for the record? Sorry, Tom.
How y'all doing? I'm James Burnstead, owner of Signs by James. And me and the Ann Savannah very well known that we can't have a internally lit front lit sign. We understand that and respect that. And the architects and engineers and all, we've been trying to figure out a way. They didn't really want to go lighted to start with. They really want something low key. They want something high class. But where it's mounted on an island between the two buildings and it's back off the road and all the lighting is underneath it. So at night it really just disappears. So they really needed some kind of lighting. And, I told them they can have external lighting, but everywhere they tried to put the external lighting, there's a walkway above it, glass walkway. And if you put external lighting shining at the thing, it bothers them people. And also they have rooms on both sides. Somebody's going to have to close their window because they could see the floodlights. And I suggested the best way to externally light it would be to put low voltage LEDs in a metal stainless steel letter raised off the background and have that externally lighting the background. So there's no externally lighting and nobody from the either side can see the lights. And we're asking for permission to do the external lighting like that inside the metal letter shining back on the background, the halo effect. That way it'd be very subtle. That's another thing too. They didn't want the floodlight because they didn't want to light up that whole area. They just want just a sign to be readable from the road. But if we put the LED lights in a metal letter and halo it against the wall, that way there's no forward facing light. Nobody will be able to see it even from the sides, but you'll be able to read what it says from the halo around the letters. And we just wonder if we can externally light it like that. I got a picture of a sign I did in the airport, if y'all wouldn't mind looking at it, to show you how much, let me show you what I'm talking about.
Yeah, absolutely.
It's just the length of 7 inches tall. So we just put the mini LEDs inside the metal letters so nobody would be able to see it. There would be no front facing light. And that would be the lowest light value, and that's really what they want. They don't want a bright sign.
And then with regard to the other sign, were you able to confirm that that's no less than 8 feet above the pedestrian walkway?
Yes, ma'am. It's 10 feet.
Okay, thank you. Were there any questions for the petitioner, Mr. Thompson?
Initially, I had a question, but the picture
answered. Okay. Mr. Higgins?
Have you considered, are you open to filing for a variance?
We just wanted to try to just go by the external lighting option. We were just trying to do it a way that nobody could see the lights. Because they really don't, they didn't want to internally front lit sign. They really want to try to make this a high end place. And they don't like the looks of the internally lit signs.
Were there any other questions for the petitioner?
The external lighting is lights on the outside shining back on it. Well, this is the same thing. We're just putting the lights on the letters, and we've got the letters raised off the background and shining back on the background. So, but you don't see the light from anywhere. All you're seeing is the glow around the letters. That would be the lowest light option possible.
Go ahead.
This is more so for staff.
Yeah, I think, are there any additional questions for the petitioner? Thank you, Mr. Burnson.
Thank you.
I think y'all probably have the same question that I do for staff, if that's an accurate interpretation of the ordinance. If the light is affixed to a protruding part of the sign and shooting back, does that qualify as external illumination?
Our interpretation would be that what the applicant just showed with the Delta Sky Club, that would still be internally illuminated. So what we're talking about, as I think Mr. Higgins was saying, is, you know, you've seen them all over where you have actual light fixtures that flood, yeah, light up a sign. So unfortunately, our reading of it, this would still require a variance.
If they want to go with that.
If they want to go with that.
Okay.
We're not saying that we don't think this is visually compatible, but it's just the ordinance, that the way it's written, wouldn't allow it.
If this was continued, what would the criteria be for filing for the variance time-wise?
Yeah, because they won't open up in the middle of January, and we've really got to get started on the signage.
What is, Jonathan, what's the filing deadline for if they request a variance?
So the filing deadline for the next meeting is tomorrow.
Okay.
Is there any way, I mean, if y'all going to throw it out, can you just approve it as non-lit then? Because I've got to start on the sign no matter what, because they're hounding me like crazy because they can't open without a sign.
I mean, I think that's up to you. If you want to amend, if you want to say that you're applying for a non-illuminated sign, that's something that we can consider. But if you want to illuminate it, the way that you're suggesting would require a variance. And so that would be, again, subject to this board's decision, likely a continuance until next month to allow you time to apply for the variance.
Yeah, we wouldn't be able to do that.
Yes, so I'm sorry, I didn't mean to interrupt you. But yes, as noted in the conditions here, change the wall sign so that it is either externally illuminated or is no illumination at all. And as you know, you can grant special exceptions. You can't grant variances. So you can make a recommendation on a variance. Just wanted to make that clear. This board can't give you a variance.
Is that clear?
So nay?
Yeah.
So if it's nay, then I would request just for the sign.
Okay. Thank you.
Okay, thank
you. Is there a member of the public that would like to speak on this matter? No one online. All right. At this time, we'll enter into board discussion. Mr. Higgins, I'll start with you.
I think it's pretty clear that I support staff recommendations. They've made it very clear. We've had discussions. I think we've given the petitioner an opportunity to, make changes. They just said, approve it like it is. Support that.
Thank you, Mr. Higgins. Mr. Thompson.
I'm confused by what you just said because I thought I heard him say be happy with it being approved without lighting at all, which is consistent with the recommendations from staff. So, we can prove this and he can go ahead and build his sign, put it up, but not have lights either way. So, okay, that's my two cents.
Thank you, Mr. Thompson. Ms. Woodfield.
I think that you've stated the issue right here is either if you want to move ahead with the sign right now, it has to be non-illuminated, or you can come back for a variance and it comes to this board. Is that correct? Perhaps in January. It goes to a different board for the variance.
So you all make recommendations to the Zoning Board of Appeals. And the Zoning Board of Appeals makes the final decision. You can't give them a variance, but you can make a recommendation.
Thank you, Jonathan.
So Jonathan, to, to follow up with what you just said and not to put any ideas in anybody's mind whatsoever. If the if we acted today and there was a non-illuminated sign and we made a approval for a variance, not an approval, but a recommendation, and after that the zoning appeals board said okay, then he plugs lights in and he's got his lights with a light behind them. Would that be possible?
So he has not requested your weighing in on a potential variance. So that would have to be done. Again, he would have to come back to you and request that. As staff has noted, what staff is recommending is to for the wall sign to have it either be externally illuminated, so lights that illuminate it, or no illumination. And I believe the applicant was saying he would prefer to just move forward with a non-illuminated sign. In the future, he can he and or his client can come back and request, you know, a halo lit sign as he was showing you, and request a recommendation on a variance to the ZBA from you. Hope that makes sense.
Thank you, Jonathan. Mr. Higgins?
No additional comment.
Mr. Thompson?
No other comments.
Ms. Woodfield?
No comments.
Mr. Hull?
Nothing more.
At this time, I'll entertain a motion.
Higgins, I move the Savannah Historic District Board of Review with regard to 24-005465 COA, 110 Ann Street, approve the one wall sign and one projecting sign at 110 Ann Street with the following conditions to be met prior to work taking place because the work is otherwise visually compatible and meets the standards. One, change the wall sign so that it is either externally illuminated sign or has no illumination at all, or apply for a variance request to be heard by the Historic District Board of Review. And with regard to the second condition, I believe that's already been stated and met.
Thank you, Mr. Higgins. The motion on the floor is to approve the petition with the staff recommendations with an acknowledgement that the second one has been met. Do I have a second?
Thompson, second.
Thank you, Mr. Thompson. Mr. Higgins, how do you vote?
Aye.
Mr. Thompson?
Aye.
Ms. Woodfield?
Aye.
Mr. Hull?
Aye.
The ayes have it. That petition is approved with staff recommendations. Next item up on the regular agenda is the petition of Christian Sotil of Sotil and Sotil, file numbers 24-006077 COA for 236 Drayton Street.
Good afternoon. Jonathan Mellon again. So I think we all know this site. It's one of the historic gas stations. I believe this was constructed in 1936. It's north of the Liberty Street corridor. It has been adaptively reused into a restaurant. This is a view here. I can zoom a little bit. This is a view looking east. This is the site in question. As you all know, the Perilena Hotel was constructed directly behind to the east and also to the north. I'm just going to zoom in a little bit more because I think it's helpful. So this is the historic 1936 former gas station, filling station. When it was repurposed or adaptively reused into its current use as a restaurant, there were some changes made, notably to provide public safety. I believe that was part of the reason behind it, and also just to kind of contain the use. This low-scale wall was put in around the perimeter. In addition, the historic filling station was restored. As well, there are these existing fabric awnings that provide protection from the sun and attempt to provide protection from the rain. This area, sorry, I will zoom back out, was impacted greatly by automobile development. There was a number of buildings that were demolished. Directly to the south, You have the large apartment buildings that we all know that front on Liberty Street. And then you have some more modestly scaled buildings. But there's a bit of a commercial corridor, I think it's fair to say, between Liberty and Oglethorpe along this stretch of Drayton Street. You have Parker's, you have the West Elm store, you have a bank, you have McDonough's, you have the movie theater, and then you have the Board of Ed up at the north, and then some wonderful houses on Oglethorpe. So just walk you through quickly, the project architect is here, but again, existing conditions, these fabric awnings that are held in place by these posts, and then this is this perimeter wall. So there are three components of the proposed plan, and the first one is for the addition, I'm going to zoom in right here. So a small steel canopy that would be the only thing that would be actually attached to the historic building. Staff has reviewed this and found that it meets all the standards. The more major intervention is the addition of this new freestanding canopy that would use the existing steel columns as support. The applicant has chosen to design it very streamlined, not have it compete architecturally with the 1936 design of the filling station. And here's a good view of it right here. Staff is recommending approval of both the small canopy that's attached to the 1936 filling station, former filling station, as well as the freestanding canopy. The third and final component, which I will get to right here. As I mentioned, there's this perimeter wall that obviously was not original to the site. On the southern edge, the applicant is proposing, facing the lane, the installation of these panels, louvered panels, in between the piers to provide screening of the lane and various things going on in the lane. As we noted, in staff's view, one of the character defining features of this site, it's always a challenge when you're adaptively reusing, a gas station, filling station, is the open nature of it. And so, what they're proposing is to put, additional fencing here along the southern elevation. Staff, does not feel that is visually compatible. Or keeping in within the Secretary of the Interior standards, it's really altering the character, and also is kind of a first step potentially of a full enclosure of this front yard, which we do not feel would be visually compatible nor meet the standards. So again, staff is going to go to our recommendation. Let's turn out again. So for 236 Drayton Street, our recommendation is approval for the installation of a steel canopy to the 1936 building, as well as the freestanding steel canopy in the front of the site, because the work is visually compatible and meets the standards, and denial of the installation of the proposed steel and wood louvered screening on the south section of the perimeter wall fronting on East Perry Lane, because the proposed work is not visually compatible and does not meet the standards. And here to answer any questions, and I know the architect is right here to answer any questions you may have.
Thank you, Jonathan. Are there questions for staff? Mr. Thompson.
In the picture of that you were showing, it showed two cars parked on the side where they want the louvers. Are those legal parking spaces, or are you aware if they're legal parking spaces?
I am not. The project architect may have some better
knowledge of that. Okay.
Yes.
I can wait.
Yeah, we did not get into that, but.
All right. The question's out there, so it can be answered. All right. Thanks.
Mr. Hula, I've got one question, two parts. The top part of the recommendation, the installation of the steel canopy and the freestanding steel canopy, I'm trying to get a visual, and I'm glad you brought this up. The steel part is, if you're looking at the picture here, the major,
Oh, sorry, Stan, I'm going to try to pull up. So yes, hopefully this might help.
Yeah, I'm going to call it the big steel piece.
Yes.
Is to the left and the freestanding is to the right, correct?
Yes, exactly. There's a small one. I'll let the architect walk you through it. That's attached to the building. But the main one is this one right here, freestanding canopy on existing steel columns.
Okay. Thank you.
Are there any additional questions for staff?
One quick one, and this may be more for the applicant, but I know on the large canopy, it's got a built-in gutter. How is the runoff handled off this? Are we going to get into a downspout challenge?
I'll let the architect answer that one. That's a good question.
Any additional questions for staff? Thank you, Jonathan. Would the applicant please come forward and state your name for the record?
Hi, good afternoon. My name is Christian Sotil. I'm joined today with Craig Clements, a senior architect in our studio. And we're pleased to be here. Appreciate your time in reviewing it. We appreciate staff's review as well. It's a unique project. And I want to say we actually had an opportunity to follow up after receiving the staff report and had the opportunity to meet with the staff. We appreciate that to better understand the staff's concerns about that louvered screen on the lane. And we then subsequently met with the client for the project to talk them through it and explain the rationale behind it. And so I wanted to say that we can say today that we are willing to comply with the staff recommendation and accept the staff recommendation to remove the louvered screens from the project. So I wanted to say that as we got started. To answer some of the questions that I heard just a moment ago, first, Mr. Thompson, that parking that is there, and that's not part of our petition in any way, but that is off the lane, that is parking on their property that's taken from the lane side. We have to remember this is a urban block in the historic core, so we're looking at the back when we look at that part of the project, and that's their lane parking. Mr. Houle, question about the canopy, the freestanding canopy is that very streamlined canopy that we've placed where the existing vertical stanchions are. The other canopy is actually located in the upper parapet of the building, which is also meant to be very low profile, but really for water protection for the entries to the building. I hope that answers the question. I can go to the drawings maybe if that would be easier. Let me do that. This is a project that, we've really endeavored to keep everything very, very streamlined and keeping with the spirit of the building. So funny, when you see it in elevation, it's a 10-inch thin canopy, which is kind of the point, to keep everything very transparent. But practical, and also to keep the new work freestanding. So this is a side view. This is actually looking in from the lane. What you can see here is the steel canopy that would be on the existing structure is designed just to be large enough to keep water from falling through the openings to the building where they are. And then the canopy that is adjacent to it is in fact freestanding. It doesn't touch the historic building. And then I think the third question, which is a good one, I appreciate it, is what about the water? There are no gutters. We've actually designed an integrated channeled gutter inside that very thin canopy with outlets to the parking area that we were just talking about so that it would drain into the lane like you would expect a roof to, but we did not want to add additional verticals or additional downspouts into that view. So we're comfortable with that that solution, but those are all integrated, so there are no downspouts to it. So with that, I'm happy to answer any questions that you all may have.
Thank you, Mr. Sotil. Are there questions for the applicant?
I just had one. Oh, go ahead. Oh, okay.
Mr. Hulk, just turn your mic back on.
Thank you. I wanted to follow up a little bit about the freestanding canopy, because I guess when you've been on the board a while, you had this one come back. You had this when Zunzi's first moved down the street. And I thought I remembered at that point that the conversation was, we want awnings or material, that sort of thing, so that it wouldn't distract from the historic nature of the gas station. But now kind of what I'm seeing is, well, we got rained on too much, or sun was too hot or something, and the owner, I guess, is coming back with something that adds one more step, and I'm just a little bit concerned that, well, maybe this is the first step, and the next couple of years from now there's going to be another request to put another steel canopy on because it's rained too hard in Savannah. So can you make me feel better?
Well, it does rain in Savannah, as it is today. But no, I think the conversation, that's a very practical thing. The company moved into this site, some years ago now, and the solution then was to try to create some usability. We have to remember, and this is a urban block that ought to have uses in it that aren't automobile uses. Of course, a filling station, there's a nostalgia around it, certainly, but it's not a building we would ever approve again today. We know that. It's completely contrary to our ordinance, which is about having street frontage, having architectural presence, and having, an urban character that reinforces the city plan. This building does none of those things, and we know that. But it's a part of the story of Savannah. It's part of the story of the 20th century and the loss of character and the loss of fabric and definition along these edges. So at the time, the question was, how do we make this building more usable today and respect the character of what it is? And so for this rear portion of the site where the canopies were created, these sails, it was obviously the back of the site. I would say the front of the site is certainly the corner that you're seeing in the rendering. It's that northwest corner. That's truly the front, and the rear is toward the lane where the service bays were. But that area was proposed for, with all, expectations around what would be make it better, make it more usable with those shade sails, which I might suggest, this is an architectural thing, but I might suggest those are a bit more chaotic than what we're doing now. In fact, I was thinking about that. They're, triangular sails that move up and down. They span, I think, about 30 inches from top to bottom. So we felt like this was an opportunity when the owner came back and said, we've used the site now. We do, we use this area, but we think it would be better served without, with a better covering. We said, well, first of all, we want to keep it really streamlined. We want to calm it down. And so that was our thought process for it. And this is all that's being proposed. I don't expect there will ever be another proposal for this. And I think it's partly because this is really what's right for the site. We're taking the back of it. We're working with existing structure that's already there. So we're not adding anything vertically into that view. And we took that really to heart from the very beginning when we started the thought process of how would we do that. Had this program been the program then, this is most likely exactly how we would have proposed it then. So it is a little bit evolutionary, but I appreciate your concern too. Thank you for that.
I have one more question. It's more of a clarification, Higgins. Are there going to be any fans, blowers, anything hanging down from the canopy?
Not to our knowledge. Our goal is to be, keep it completely streamlined. And there's no signs, by the way. Just thought I might add that.
Thank goodness for small miracles. Were there any additional questions for the applicant?
Only a comment. If you ever do put fans in, make them high enough for people like me.
And one additional from Ms. Whitfield.
Yeah, I just wanted to clarify, you're using the existing posts?
Yes.
And are there any extra posts? It kind of looks like there were some other posts that were closer to the built-in canopy.
No, there will be no additional posts.
Okay, so everything that's there, and you'll use them all.
Craig Clements, Sutil and Sutil. Just to clarify, there are more posts than we are using existing on the site. So the extra posts you saw are there already. We're just not using them. So that's
my question, though, is are you leaving them or are you taking them?
We're leaving them, but
the
we're not
extra posts.
Them. Yeah, we're leaving them as far as I know. We're not planning to take them out, but we're not adding any.
And do they have a purpose? I mean, as far as chaos or
Part of the existing. They're part of the existing system that they have up there.
So will they keep some of the sailcloth triangles?
The proposal is to modify the rear part
leave some of the sail.
Yes.
Proposals in the middle.
That's correct.
Any other questions for the applicant? Thank you, Mr. Sutil.
Thank you.
Is there a member of the public that wishes to speak? Okay, at this time, we'll enter into board discussion. Mr. Houle, I'll start with you.
Well, Mr. Sutil seemed to have allayed my concerns about a creeping roof line for this structure. Other than that, I'm comfortable with the staff's recommendations.
Woodfield, I'm comfortable with the recommendations. I think this will give a nice simplicity to the site. Not sure about leaving the sailcloth, but I don't think that's our choice right now, is it?
Thank you, Ms. Woodfield. Mr. Thompson.
I support staff recommendation and the applicant did too, so good.
Mr. Higgins.
Support staff recommendations.
Wasn't trying to skip you. Mr. Houle, I'll go back around to you.
No further comment.
Ms. Woodfield.
No further comments.
Mr. Thompson. Mr. Higgins.
No comment.
All right, at this time, I'll entertain a motion.
Houle. I move that the Savannah Downtown Board, Historic Board of Review approve the petition 240060777COA for the installation of the steel canopy to the 1936 building and freestanding steel canopy to the front of the site because the work is visually compatible and meets the standards, and deny the installation of steel and wood louvered screening on the south section of the perimeter wall fronting on East Perry Lane because the proposed work is not visually compatible and does not meet the standards.
Thank you, Mr. Houle. The motion on the floor is to approve the installation of the steel canopy on the front side of the property and deny the installation of the steel and wood louvered screening on the south side. Do I have a second?
Second.
Ms. Woodfield with a second. Mr. Houle, how do you vote?
Aye.
Ms. Woodfield?
Aye.
Mr. Thompson?
Aye.
Mr. Higgins?
Aye.
That motion is approved. Next item up on the agenda is, again, the petition of Christian Sutil with Sutil and Sutil, file number 24-006085COA for 202 East Gwinnett Street.
Good afternoon, Jonathan Mellon again. As noted, this is an amendment to a previously approved COA for the corner house at the corner of Gwinnett and Abercorn at 202 East Gwinnett. Here's the site in question. Directly to the west is the large hotel project that you all are probably familiar with. And then, of course, Forsyth Park. And to the east is the Kroger. This is a block with particularly wonderful houses and architectural styles. I think we all know this house. We've probably all driven by it 10,000 times. Again, it's on a corner lot. What's interesting about this house is it's all four elevations are quite visible and prominent. So this is looking north. This is the front elevation. But again, the side elevation, which is right here, faces Abercorn Street. And then the lot goes obviously all the way back to the lane. So you can see it when you're coming down Abercorn Street. And then if you're walking on Gwinnett to the west, you also see the side elevation, which has this really lovely two-story porch. So there are three components to this proposed amendment, and I will walk you through each of them. I'm going to start. I always don't want to jinx things by saying the easiest part. This is the rear elevation that I was talking about. And you can see right here, this is the elevation, the side elevation that is facing Abercorn Street. The applicant is proposing to screen rooftop mechanical equipment. You can see here the proposed screening. Staff is recommending approval for that. In addition, on the front elevation, as I mentioned, there's this two-story porch. They are proposing to install operable shutters. The staff is also recommending approval. As I'm sure you noted in the staff report, staff walked the area. The ordinance specifically allows operable shutters to be installed on porches. And we noted a number of examples of these operable shutters, as you can see here in these photos. Interestingly enough, quite a number of these, Gaston Street has a number of these, but it's quite common. So those are the first two elements, or however order we want to describe them in. The last portion of this relates to the garden wall. You all approved this garden wall here and this gate, which I will let the architect articulate far better than I could in terms of the architectural inspiration for that. And so what's being proposed now is a different design for the gate, some minor modifications to this wall, and then this arched piece where there would also be a light fixture. So again, this is what was approved right here. Let me zoom in. And then what's being proposed is this. So three elements: screening the rooftop mechanical equipment on the rear, adding the shutters, the operable shutters, to the front of the porch, and then a modification to, and again, these are, sorry, the picture here, but this is the two-story porch on the side and the wall back here. So with all of that, back out. Staff is recommending approval of the proposed amendment for alterations to the design of the garden wall and gate, the addition of shutters to the front elevation of the two-story side porch, and the addition of screening for the roof-mounted HVAC units to the property located at 202 East Gwinnett Street as requested, because the work is visually compatible and meets the standards.
Thank you, Jonathan. Are there questions for staff on this application?
One quick question.
Sure.
Just a quick question. It's not alterations to the garden wall. It's only our alterations to the gate.
No, there's some slight alterations to the wall as well.
Okay.
Yeah. Okay. It's basically staying the same wall, but I believe the architect can correct me, but there's some minor changes to the wall itself, dimensionally, and with a few of the details, which the architect can walk you through. That's a great question. Thank you.
Additional questions for staff?
Yes, Higgins. A couple of things. The original iteration of the garden gate was iron, if I remember it correctly.
And I'll pull it up for you right here. Yes, let me zoom in here for you, Mr. Higgins.
It's basically you could see through the entire length of the gate in the garden.
Metal squirrel work you can see here. Yes, it was.
And so the one that is being proposed is a solid panel.
Yes.
The lower two-thirds of it, which obscure the vision, the view into the garden.
Correct. Yes.
My other question is with regard to the HVAC equipment. I do not recall it being located on the porch roof the first time we heard this. And now it is. And I looked at a Google view, because the Google view has been updated. But the one from March of 2022 does not have HVAC equipment on top of the porch. Did staff work with the petitioner on this?
I'll let the petitioner provide some background on this. I did. This was one of the first questions that we had. We did not see, when you all reviewed this before, a review of the mechanical equipment.
Additional questions for Jonathan? Thank you, Jonathan.
Of course.
Would the petitioner like to come forward and state your name for the record?
Good afternoon again, Christian Sotil, petitioner for this project, this renovation at 202 Gwinnett. It's on behalf of Anthony Consul and J.A.K. Holmes. It's actually been a renovation that, I think, as you all know, has been underway for some time now. I think this is our third time to the board, so I wish we should have just done it all at one time. But anyway, we're here with these three things, this gate and fence amendment, the shutters at the porch, and the screening of that mechanical area. And I appreciate the presentation. I can just maybe answer some of the questions that I heard just a moment ago about the garden wall. The garden wall is actually brand new. the new owner of this property has requested that it be raised just a little bit for privacy. So we'll be, in fact, raising by three brick courses the wall that's there. So it's a modification. Again, I wish we would have done this to begin with, but it's, you know, it's the desire of an owner, and that's sort of how we have, that's why our city is the way it is. It, you know, it reflects the owners of these buildings. When that wall was initially designed, there was not an owner of the building. So it was something that we put forward thinking it was a good base case design and that this was a desire that they had, and actually works very well. So it's worth the trouble to do it, including the revision of the gate, which was an open iron gate. In fact, going back, I might not have proposed that. The point of a wall that's beyond the street yard, this is located at the beginning of the private side yard, the private courtyard, and really the typology is typically to have privacy in that location, and that's in fact exactly what these owners wanted. And so we would be essentially building a new gate that would be an appropriate gate, but a gate that provided some privacy to that garden, and they requested a lantern as a part of that as well. So those are the edits to the beginning of the private garden that happens at the back of the street yard. This is set back from the street, the length of the whole front street yard, and then where the private part of the garden begins. Similarly with the shutters, a desire to have just a bit more privacy, which we understand. And then in respect to the screening of the HVAC that is on the rear of the home on that addition, that actually, in fact, was an existing location for mechanical equipment. Had we, at the time of the first submittal, submitted everything, that would have been a very logical time to do that. We did not. It wasn't a priority at that time. And as the home was being finished, it was identified that existing mechanical area ought to be screened. Of course, we felt like that was sort of a simple thing to do and wish we had done it originally, but brought it forward. In fact, I think these three items are all minor review items that are typically would be handled as a staff level review. But because there were three of them and an abundance of
caution, we've put them together into this amendment package for your review this afternoon. So if that answers the questions or if there are any others I can answer, please let me know.
Were there additional questions for the applicant?
Woodfield, maybe this is a question or a comment, but I also canvassed that area and Jones and lots of other areas about the screen porches. And, you know, the buildings in the community are the solid part and the porches are the transparent part. So they become, the building becomes, or the site is less bulky because you have the building and then you have an open porch. So while, yes, there are some screen porches, you know, most of them are not screen. They are open porches. And, yes, there's a few that have double screens, but there's also a number of modifications, especially along Gaston. I think more than the double is if there's just a shutter on the lower level. And I think if, you know, if you look around and you observe, you can see that it makes quite a difference to the appearance of the building to have this whole facade solid, which is what these screens are going to do, versus having the open porches. So while I can understand the need for privacy, it also changes the friendliness of the building and the street when you block off your porches. You know, you wouldn't consider blocking off your entrance stoop. We understand it's a building with a stoop. It's a building with a porch. So I'm just suggesting that, you know, it would be a nicer facade, neighborhood interaction, indoor, outdoor, if you would consider just putting the screen shutters on the lower level of the porch and not on the upper level. Because you're only doing it on the front. You're not doing it on the side. So I just think it would sort of soften that barrier between, you know, wanting privacy so much that you're blocking off the entire street.
Are there additional questions for the applicant?
Just back to the, I know I'm going to sound like a broken record, back to the HVAC units. You said this was an existing location?
It was.
New units were installed?
I'm sorry?
You installed new units?
I didn't install any units myself. I do believe there are some additional units on the platform that was there, to my knowledge. That was a pre-existing location where refrigerant and all the infrastructure for the building. This is an existing building and it's being renovated. So that was a location that was kept in service and had not previously been screened before. So.
Any additional questions for the applicant? Thank you, Mr. Sotiel. Is there a member of the public that would like to comment?
I have three slides to help you. Andrew Jones, Oglethorpe Plan Coalition. We oppose the new gate and gas lantern. And I'd like to start with a historic photo of 202 East Gwinnett and the adjacent contributing structure at 206 through 208 East Gwinnett. Thank you. So what's important to note is that there are no arched forms or big semicircles. The only curved forms you have are what they're called segmental arches over the windows in 202, but otherwise it's very rectilinear. And notice, of course, between the buildings, there is no brick wall, no gate, no gas lantern, just big open space and open porches as you see here. So that's important for you to see this historical context. We see in the next slide the new carriage house with its federal style fan window. And of course, this is the window that was inadvertently mistakenly approved by staff. despite the fact that any changes to a non-contributing structure should have come to you for your review. Also seen is my crude little mock-up here of that arch that would be over the gate, a Colonial Revival iron arch and gas lantern. And when all these proposed elements are viewed together, the confusion of designs is visually problematic. In addition to the fan window being incompatible with the windows adjacent to it, and certainly incompatible with the two contributing buildings on either side, this incompatibility is exacerbated by echoing it in a arch design for the gate, which leads us to the first reason you should deny the gate design is because the rhythm of solids and voids is visually incompatible with the buildings on each side, which are generally rectilinear. In addition, the second reason you should deny the gate design is the Secretary of Interior standards that say that changes that create a false sense of historical development, such as adding architectural elements from other buildings, shall not be undertaken, shall not. So what you see is elements from Colonial Charleston. In fact, this lantern looks almost identical to these two gas lanterns on a 18th century Charleston doorway. And you see a lovely iron overgate design on a Charleston doorway, and again, the Charleston brick fence. And so that's borrowed from those elements. And then they've been added onto, I think it's called a moon gate. It's an Asian inspiration of a circular design. So we've got this concoction of Colonial Charleston, an Asian design, and then we take that concoction in a ersatz fashion. We're deciding then to paste it on to an Italianate house of the Victorian period.
Mr. Jones, please wrap up your comments.
Yes. So it violates the Secretary of Interior standards. We find very parallel to taking the Italianate facade of the carriage house that you had approved, then adding a federal window from Charles Bulfinch Boston 1790s design to create the carriage house that we have. And we feel that the gate exacerbates the problem here created with the carriage house, and would like you to deny the gate design and the gas lantern. And we are concerned about the screening mechanicals. We just don't factually understand the situation. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Jones. Is there another member of the public who wishes to speak? And I would ask that you limit your comments to the petition that is before us today and not something that is part of a previous decision, and then also limit your comments to 3 minutes or less. Okay. And state your name for the record.
Thank you. My name is Jim Hunsrucker. I have lived next door to this property since 1995. My partner has lived in the neighborhood since 1974. I do have a picture from June 21st, 2023 that shows nothing up on top of that roof deck. I have sent it to Jonathan. All that's up there is an old satellite that was from the previous owner who moved in September of 2019. Then there was another owner, and then anyway. So I am opposed to the gas lantern and arch, for there is no historic reference in the neighborhood. The shutters, I would approve with lowering them, because on our house we had a decorative ornament. And so if we did the same, there would be this openness above. So I would appreciate that point. And as far as having a gas lantern, there's no example in the neighborhood. All the ones that I've seen is kind of a fad from the early 2000s that have gas lanterns outside. And I don't think that there's any reference in the neighborhood of any historic use. In 1883 is when electricity was introduced to Savannah. So by a decade or two later, everything was electric. These houses were electrified, the gas eliminated soon thereafter. They were originally plumbed. And that's all. Thank you.
Thank you. Is there another member of the public who wishes to speak? Anyone online? Does the petitioner wish to respond to public comment?
Thank you. I'll just briefly say the Latin comes to mind, de gustibus non disputandum est, which is
you know, matters of taste, there really should not be discussion. We should stick to facts. And I think this is one of those matters where it's a question of preference. I do, I understand the comments of Mr. Jones and Mr. Hunsrucker. We, in fact, had an opportunity to meet with them on site, and they shared some of those concerns with us. And I would say, had this been their property and they had been requesting how they wanted to do a lantern or not do a lantern, we certainly, there are many ways it could be done, but this is the taste of an owner and one that we believe is extremely well precedented. And I'm happy. I have photographs of this configuration here in Savannah on Italianate buildings. There are many, many examples that we could look at. And I would say that for the lanterns, the gates, but I'd also say for the shutters and, to Ms. Woodfield's concern, I do understand your comment about the shutters creating a new layer of this home that's not there now. We spent a lot of time looking. In fact, I hadn't personally realized just how many examples there are of owners adding shutters for privacy to their porches. And so we wanted to make sure we were doing it the right way. And I realized just how many there were. I mean, Mr. Mellon pointed out the example at 20 West Jones Street, it's another beautiful Italianate building by John Norris. We looked at that. We looked at home on East Charleston Street, old Hartridge home. What we often saw was they were more complete. They would close the side as well. Sometimes they would actually remove the pickets and go all the way down to the floor. And in many cases are not operable. So we said, well, why don't we do this in as light a manner as we can, recognizing those concerns that you brought up. So we propose in this amendment for those shutters to be added just to the front and from the rail up, and to actually have fully opening central sections. So you could actually leave them open and have that kind of half and half appearance. We felt like this is a good solution, certainly built on very traditional precedents here in Savannah, and a recognition that these are living buildings. And you know, this is why we're all here. So I'll leave it at that, but thank you all.
Thank you, Mr. Sotil. At this time, we will enter into board discussion. Mr. Houle, I'll start with you.
I'm comfortable with the staff's recommendation.
Thank you, Mr. Houle. Ms. Woodfield?
I'm comfortable with the staff's recommendation. I feel like we do have to allow the owners to adapt their buildings, and I don't see that this is against the historic precedents we have.
Thank you, Ms. Woodfield. Mr. Thompson?
Yeah, I'm in favor of staff recommendation, too.
Thank you, Mr. Thompson. Mr. Higgins?
I'm very concerned with how this creeping project is changing the view on this block. If you walk this block, there are wonderful spaces in between these houses that are open visually. You can look through to the gardens. It's just a very open and welcoming block. What's happening is the brick wall is being raised by almost a foot. An open gate where you could look into the garden is being replaced by a full closed panel. You can still see a little bit at the top, but most of it's a full panel. And then the shutters. So it's creating almost a wall that's almost directly on the sidewalk that blocks this entire side garden. And I think it has some real visual compatibility issues with the surrounding contributing properties. And I'm also concerned about how the HVAC units got up on the roof of the rear porch. That's such a prominent facade, and we have held previously that if there's an alternate location, such as down in the garden, they be put there so we don't have these intrusive things on the roof, especially of a very prominent facade. So I have some challenges with this one.
Thank you, Mr. Higgins. Mr. Houle, I'll come back around to you.
No other comments.
Ms. Woodfield?
No other comments.
Mr. Thompson?
No other comments.
Mr. Higgins?
No other comment.
Thank you. At this time, I will entertain a motion.
Thompson. I move that the Savannah Downtown Historic Board of Review approve the petition 202 East Gwinnett Street 24006085 COA, a petition of Christian Sotil, and approve the request for the alterations of the design of the garden wall and gate and the addition of shutters to the front elevation of the two-story side porch and the addition of screening for the roof-mounted HVAC units to the property, again, located at 202 East Gwinnett Street as requested, because the work is visually compatible and meets the standards.
Thank you, Mr. Thompson. The motion on the floor is to approve the petition for 202 East Gwinnett as presented. Do I have a second?
Madam Chair, before I second, can I ask a question? The thing that's on the screen here has two numbers on it. Which one's right?
So it's the one on the top is the application number that was assigned to it, but it's an amendment to an earlier COA. So
I see.
Sorry,
I see.
That's right. There's, okay. That's
right. And I second the motion.
Okay, thank you. We have a motion from Mr. Thompson with a second from Mr. Houle to approve the application as presented. Mr. Houle, how do you vote?
Aye.
Ms. Woodfield?
Aye.
Mr. Thompson?
Aye.
Mr. Higgins?
Nay.
Okay, the ayes have it. That motion is approved. The next item up on the regular agenda is the petition of Isabella Booth with Whitfield Signs, file number 24-005979 COA for 630 Indian Street.
So the applicant is requesting an illuminated wall sign at this property. Overall, the sign that's meeting standards with things like size and location. But as with the previous sign application, the sign again is illuminated, but it's opposite residential units. And per the ordinance, illuminated signs cannot be opposite residential units. Worth noting, in the staff report, she is requesting a special exception. Special exceptions cannot be applied to signage per the code. Again, they could request a variance, but the special exception cannot be applied in this case. So again, staff overall approves and recommends approval, but without the internal illumination due to the residents across the street. So with that, staff recommends approval of the wall sign 630 Indian Street with the following condition to be met prior to work taking place because the work is otherwise visually compatible and meets the standards. And that is to change the wall sign so that it's either externally illuminated or has no illumination or for that to apply for the variance.
Thank you, Kelly. Are there questions for staff?
Is the applicant here?
Applicant is online.
It's a general question. Are those all solar panels on the top of this building?
I have noticed that, and that's why I assume they were, but that's not part of the course of this project. I assume that those were, but again, that's not part of this project.
I guess you can hear me ask the question, so, or you.
Were there any additional questions for staff? Ms. Woodfield?
Could you please show us the sign?
The signs are hit at Crave, Hot Dogs, and...
Yes, so see how it seems to overlay the top of the arch of the building? Is that what they're really intending to do?
That's how staff interprets it. You can ask the applicant.
That's very high up. You know, it seems to me it would be more appropriate if it was over the doors and not so high up on the building. You know, more about the entrance.
At that point, just heads up, I believe walls, window signs cannot be illuminated. So some of it may be the illumination aspect as well.
Sorry, I didn't hear.
If they move it down, that would become a window sign. And I believe window signs can't be illuminated. So I don't know if that was part of the factor as well. So these are windows right here. So that'll be a totally different sign type if they moved it down.
This street is about to, you know, be occupied. There's a lot of just storefronts and businesses are coming in. So I think what we're approving here is, you know, going to be precedent setting. So I guess we have two questions. One is whether we're approving the sign with illumination or without illumination.
Yeah, as presented, yes.
Right. So again, I think it's worth talking about the sign a little bit and whether the sign is appropriate. So
are you asking,
if we want to do this now, or
are you asking staff if the sign meets the sign ordinance standards?
Yes, thank you for the prompt. Yes.
Does staff believe that it met all the standards with the exception of the illumination? Of course, if the board believes that, you know, it's not appropriate in its current location, y'all can require it to be moved, but staff believe that it met the standards.
Does that answer your question, Ms. Whitfield? Woodfield, sorry. Were there any additional questions for staff? And you said the applicant is with us online.
Yes, ma'am. It's Isabella Booth, I believe.
Hi, yes, I'm here. I apologize. I'm homesick today.
That's okay. We appreciate you not coming and spreading your germs.
Of course.
Can you get your name for the record?
My name is Isabella Booth. I'm with Whitfield Signs in Statesboro, Georgia.
Hi, Ms. Whitfield. Did you have a presentation, or you just want us to fire some questions your way?
You're welcome to just fire some questions away.
Okay. Mr. Thompson, do you want to ask your question of the applicant?
I realize it's not material to the application, but my question was, on the top of the building, it appears it's covered with solar panels. Is that correct?
I am not sure. We had no part in that. We're just the sign installer, so that would have to be a question for the contractor.
Okay, no problem. Thank you.
Yeah, sorry.
Ms. Woodfield, did you have a question about the location of the sign?
Yes, I'm just looking at the facade where you've superimposed your sign, and it's not clear to me if you are putting this sign on top of the window arch. Is that your intention?
Yes, ma'am. So right below those arched windows is a awning. So if we lowered it, you'd either have to put it on the awning or over the windows, and it's very difficult to install over the top of those windows. So that is why it is where it is.
But it appears to be going over the brick archway.
Correct. It's all the same face. Like, none of that sticks out anymore. It is on the brick.
And are you saying an awning is going to be installed directly above the doors?
It's already there. You can kind of see it protruding out a little bit above the doors.
I drove by this morning and I don't remember an awning.
It looks like it's kind of like a flat awning, almost not.
Yeah, it's just flat. I mean, it may be protruded, but
yes, it is protruded. So to put the sign lower, we'd either have to install it onto the windows or onto the end of that canopy awning. I don't know what we want to refer to it as.
But could the sign just be on the white brick part and not overlapping the white stone part and not overlapping the brick?
I'm sure it could. It's 20 inches tall right now, so we're just reducing the viewpoint of it, I guess.
And could you remind us, please, of what the materials are?
So they are channel letters mounted on raceways. So it's an aluminum cabinet letter with acrylic faces.
And each letter is separate?
Yes, but they are mounted onto a raceway. There was another sheet in that application, sorry. That showed the construction of the sign, but it they're all mounted together onto a raceway. So there will be a rail behind it that it is installed onto. So right there, you can see it.
Is the gray part the right, the raceway, 5 inches
yes,
high?
Yes, ma'am.
And then there's another one at the barbecue and beer?
Yes, ma'am. It's a little bit lower, but it attaches to that raceway right above it. You can see the two little vertical supports a little bit below the G and in between the H and the O.
And is the purpose of the raceway to have the lighting pieces in it?
It makes it easier to
electricity.
Yes. So it's kind of twofold. When you are supplying the electricity, it allows so that you don't have to pull electrical for each letter into the wall. You just run it to one central location through that raceway. They are open to doing it non-illuminated. There's not really where it's at now. There's no area for externally illuminated, like gooseneck lighting or something like that. But they would want to keep it on a raceway. It it just makes it easier to install, and it requires less holes to be drilled to install.
Thank you. That's very helpful to explain. Mm-hmm. Thank you.
Are there any other questions for the petitioner?
Higgins, so did I hear you say you're leaning toward a non-illuminated sign?
They would prefer an illuminated if possible. And across the street is a residential, but it's also got a first floor commercial area that the sign directly faces. They would prefer to do the illuminated, but I did express to them that about the residential clause, and they have provided me with non-illuminated designs. So they are open to that aspect. Just illuminated is their number one choice.
Well, I guess a couple of things. One is, are they interested in filing for a variance so that they can have an internally illuminated sign?
So we would be open to that. I can take it back to them and just ask them one more time. If we don't think that it would get passed, then no, we don't want it because they're opening soon. We don't want to keep pushing it out more. But like if it's a definite no that it won't go through get through a variance, then probably not. But if we think that there's a chance, then I believe they would be open to it.
Okay, well, I guess a challenge I have is this race, because if it's non-illuminated, you don't really need that large of a race that's going to be really visible. It doesn't make sense. On the one facade view that we have that shows the building, we could go back there.
You should be able to go up and down on that page.
The view where it's got this on the building. There. So
it's going to be painted.
This doesn't show that race.
Yes, it does. There's an outline of it. It's going to be painted to match the color of that.
Of the stonework?
Yes.
Okay. Okay.
Any additional questions for the applicant? Okay, thank you. Is there a member of the public that wishes to speak?
Kelly Isaac, Director of Preservation for Historic Savannah Foundation. HSF's ARC has concerns over the scale of the proposed signage. The graphic sensibilities in relation to the architectural details of the facade do not correspond with each other.
Thank you, Ms. Isaacs. Just make sure you state your name for the record.
Andrew Jones, Oglethorpe Plan Coalition. I agree with the comments of Ms. Isaacs.
Thank you, Mr. Jones. Anyone else? Would the petitioner like to respond to public comment?
No, thank you. Thank you, though.
Okay, thank you. At this time, we will enter into board discussion and no further comment will be accepted. Mr. Higgins, I'll start with you.
I echo the Savannah Foundation's concerns. I'm having problems getting around this, getting my arms around this sign in its entirety. How it overlaps the arch, it kind of looks like it's pasted up. And if it goes to be a non-illuminated sign, then do you really need the boxes for each of the letters, which are a depth issue? There are just lots of challenges here.
Thank you, Mr. Higgins. Mr. Thompson?
Yes, I agree. This is not a, you know, driving by and spotting a place to eat kind of location. It's, you know, it's there and that's what you want. You want that hot dog and beer. And I don't see the need for this lettering to be so large. If they want to place it there, it should be smaller. So it fits, has been commented on, above, well above the arch and not intersect that. So that's, I think we should send it back for a redesign.
Thank you, Mr. Thompson. Ms. Woodfield?
Yes, I agree. There's a number of issues. It doesn't feel appropriate in these sort of industrial or, you know, simple buildings. It feels, it doesn't, anyway, it's not compatible with the architectural character of this building, but also there's a lot of other buildings here that, as I mentioned, are going to be having retail establishments. So there's a bit of a, I think, a precedent, but I certainly think it's the letters are too large. It overlaps the architecture. You know, what happens the next time this client moves out, someone comes in, you know, the scale, the overlapping the arch, and I think the illumination is inappropriate in this quiet walking neighborhood with a lot of residential, even though they're maybe young SCAD residential, it's still a residential neighborhood in the edge of a historic town.
Thank you, Ms. Woodfield. Mr. Houle?
I too have concerns with the size of the sign in that it overlaps onto the arch. That just creates a site.
Thank you, Mr. Houle. Mr. Higgins, I'll go back around one more time.
I'm thinking this is one that we should probably continue for everything that everyone has already said. And this will sound a little demeaning. As I look at it, it reminds me of something from an outlet mall. I would really like to see this design refined for something more metropolitan that fits more with the historic district and the historic nature of Savannah.
Thank you, Mr. Higgins. Mr. Thompson?
I agree with the proposal to continue this and then rethink the design.
Ms. Woodfield?
I agree.
Mr.
Think there's
Houle.
Enough problems.
Continuing sounds like a good idea.
Great. At this time, I'll entertain a motion.
Higgins, I move the Savannah Historic District Board of Review with regard to file 24-005979 COA 630 Indian Street, continue the petition to the January 8th, 2025 meeting so that the design may be refined as far as scale and overall design to something more appropriate to Savannah's historic district.
Thank you, Mr. Higgins. There's a motion on the floor to continue to the January 8th meeting to allow the applicant time to come back with a more appropriate design and scale and features. Do I have a second?
Second.
Thank you, Ms. Woodfield. Mr. Higgins, how do you vote?
Aye.
Mr. Thompson?
Aye.
Ms. Woodfield?
Aye.
Mr. Houle?
Aye.
That motion is approved and that petition is continued to the January 8th meeting. I would like to say that we take a brief recess since we've been sitting here for hours. Let's come back in 5 minutes.
location here.
I'm going to reconvene the meeting, and we will pick up with agenda item number 16, the petition of JDR Construction and Design, file number 24-006104, COA for 533 East Congress Street.
It's for this application. The applicant is requesting to replace the roof stucco on masonry siding at 533 East Congress Street. The project also includes removal of windows and doors in cases where flashing is required. This will not be reviewed at this time, as the same windows and doors will be reinstalled and no opening sizes are being changed in the process. As noted in the staff report, this building is non-contributing and was approved for construction back in 2013, so it's a relatively new building. The work, again, includes large-scale replacement of materials to include the stucco, masonry, and roof. While such action is not typically recommended, as existing materials should be retained whenever possible, staff found that the work met the standards given that materials are going back in kind and given that this is a relatively new building. So with that, staff recommends approval of the replacement of the roof, stucco, and masonry siding at 533 East Conder Street as requested because the work is visually compatible and meets the standards.
Thank you, Kelly. Are there questions for staff?
Given the nature of this one, why wasn't it a staff approval? What triggered it to come to us?
It was just the amount of materials that had to be replaced, since it's majority of the materials versus like two or three bricks or something along those lines.
Okay, thank you.
Yes, it's a great question. So we met out at the site with the contractors, and basically what they unfortunately discovered for the property owners is when this house was built, there's apparently no correct vapor barriers or anything behind the facade. And so water has just been pouring into this building and has basically, so the whole thing is so porous. But we didn't feel that, you know, if you look at what we can improve on staff levels, and as we now have discovered, this is a non-contributing building, so we can't approve staff level reviews. So it has to come to you guys.
Are there any additional questions for staff? Thank you, Kelly. Would the petitioner like to come forward and state your name for the record? Is the petitioner here?
I believe that he's online, I believe.
Okay.
I have it in my email, just one second. Jason Summers.
Is the applicant with us online? Okay. Well, is there a member of the public that would like to speak? Anyone online for that? Still no? Okay. At this time, we will enter into board discussion and no further public comment will be heard. Mr. Houle, I'll start with you.
I'm glad I didn't buy this place. It just, I guess the best thing I can say is that I agree with the staff's recommendations.
Thank you, Mr. Houle. Ms. Woodfield?
I agree with the staff's recommendations.
Thank you, Mr. Thompson.
Yes, I agree with the staff recommendation.
Mr. Higgins?
I agree with staff recommendations, and I also agree with what Mr. Houle said. I'm glad I didn't buy this house. Just a mess.
Since there were no questions or objections raised, I will not go around a second time, but I will entertain a motion.
Higgins, I move the Savannah Historic District Board of Review with regard to 24-006104 COA, 533 East Congress Street. Approve the replacement of the roof, stucco, and masonry siding. as requested because the work is visually compatible and meets the standards.
Thank you, Mr. Higgins. The motion on the floor is to approve with staff recommendation. Do I have a second?
Houle, second.
Thank you, Mr. Houle. Mr. Houle, how do you vote?
Aye.
Ms. Woodfield?
Aye.
Mr. Thompson?
Aye.
Mr. Higgins?
Aye.
The ayes have it. That motion is approved. We will move on to the next item, which is the petition of Tooth and Hand, file number 24-006107 COA for 132 East Broughton Street, an illuminated sign.
So this will be our final illuminated sign for the day. Again, the applicant is proposing the installation of a illuminated sign. It's shown right here on the plans. The address for the property is on Broad Street, but the signs will be facing Apricorn Street in this case. And just as a note, staff does consider this an awning sign, just given the location and the type of element this is. So those standards were used when reviewing this project. As with the other two that have gone up today, this building is opposite residential units, so internal illumination cannot be permitted. As with other cases, we suggest either external illumination, no illumination at all, or the variance request. So with that, staff recommends approval with the same condition that the previous applications had. So the board, any questions?
Are there any questions, Mr. Thompson?
So that, excuse me, that municipal grand sign will go under the canopy, just like the one picture shows?
Yeah, so that currently is a staff review, and because it's not illuminated, so we're just looking at this hotel sign, not the municipal grand sign.
Oh, just the hotel? Mm-hmm. Oh, okay. All
right. Any additional questions?
And the applicant is here as well.
Okay, thank you, Kelly. Would the applicant please come forward and state your name for the record?
Peter Lorisella, Tooth and Hand. Hi.
Thank you for bearing with us today. I'm sorry that you're at the tail end of the agenda.
I'm sorry you have another sign.
Were there any questions for the applicant?
My only comments were that we may apply for a variance solely because the Lucas Theater is 11 o'clock from us, and the marquee faces essentially three directions there, and it's all raw bulbs. So we may want slightly dimmed illumination similar to the Ann Street, where it would be dimmer in the lobby to be able to control it.
Okay. And you've worked with staff and are familiar with the process for doing so?
Correct, yes. We're in the process of that as well as the city.
Okay. And so for today, do you want to move forward with the application as is, or would you like to continue to allow you to
apply? I would love to continue as RIF externally illuminated, because we can actually put an external light at the bottom.
And then you'll separately apply for a variance?
That's correct.
Okay.
Just only solely because we have two other entrances, one in the alleyway as well as on Broughton. So we'd like to just have something go up in the next 2 or 3 months.
Understood. Were there any additional questions for the applicant? Thank you.
I appreciate your time. Thank you.
Is there a member of the public that would like to speak?
Andrew Jones, Oglethorpe Plan Coalition. Question for staff. There's a two-story building across the street. Is the upstairs residential? And how does that factor into your decision?
So from what we could tell, we could not officially confirm through stagers anything along those lines, but there is a for rent sign outside the building saying both offices and apartments. There's also Zillow postings for rooms in that building. So that's why we believe that there is residential in that upper story.
Thank you. Is there any other member of the public who wishes to speak? Does the applicant wish to respond to any of the public comment? Okay. At this time, we'll enter into board discussion and no further public comment will be heard. Mr. Higgins, I'll start with you.
No comment of the supporting staff comment.
No comment.
Ms. Woodfield?
No comment. Woodfield, no.
Mr. Hull?
No comment.
Since there was nothing material raised the first go around, I will not go around a second time, and I will now entertain a motion.
Madam Chair, I move that the Savannah Downtown Historic Board of Review approve the petition 240061-07-COA at 132 East Broughton Street with the conditions as listed in the staff recommendation.
Thank you, Mr. Hull. There is a motion to approve with the staff staff condition. Do I have a second?
Woodfield, second the motion.
Thank you, Ms. Woodfield. Mr. Higgins, how do you vote?
Aye.
Mr. Thompson?
Aye.
Ms. Woodfield?
Aye.
Mr. Hull?
Aye.
That motion is approved. Moving along to item number 18, petition of Felder and Associates, file number 24-006112-COA for 324 East State Street.
So your final project for today is a rehabilitation of the Davenport House, which is 324 East State Street. So the application was very thorough in this case and includes the cleaning of materials and kind of repair of materials and replacement of select materials when the case warrants it. So staff believed that overall the project does meet their standards. If you look at the staff report, there are quite a few conditions placed on this project. Majority of it is just confirming things like color, confirming the mortar matches what's currently there, confirming, you know, the design of the columns that they need to replace, stuff like that. There's no whole scale or large redesign that needs to be done, just a lot of detail that need to be kind of figured out. So with that, staff does approve the rehabilitation of 324 East State Street with the conditions that you see on the screen. I'm not going to try to read all those right now because there are quite a few. So, board, any questions?
Thank you, Kelly. Were there questions for staff on this one?
I believe the applicant is here as well.
Yes, would the applicant like to come forward? Applicants, I guess. Just state your name for the record.
Hello, Brian Felder.
Hi, Mr. Felder. Did you have a presentation or would you like us to just...
Yes, I'd like to read this and enter it into the record. I do think it's very thorough. I would like to congratulate Ms. Isaacs for the perfect how to restore a masonry structure built in the 1820s in the Savannah River Basin. If you'd like, I'll knock out the nine conditions.
Sure.
And we'll get on with it. Gentlest means possible, yes. Staff notes this, and it is written in some detail in our project manual, how to do it by hand, low pressure, low light detergent, biologics by hand, paint scraping by hand, no damage to the brick, no sandblasting, no high pressure wash. Confirm what work needs to be done to make the windows operable. That and a few of the others will have to happen. This is going to become an arts and crafts project in just a minute, and it will go piece by piece, two faces at a time. And we will take it apart, and we will analyze what needs to be done. There are descriptors in there for how to approach repair of the windows. It's all existing material to be replaced in kind. Things that need to be replaced will be done as they were. But that we will report back to staff if they'd like to participate. At this time, we're not aware of anything that needs to be done with the roof. As they go around and patch the masonry and brownstone, et cetera, there may be edges of the roof that become touched, in which time the materials will be analyzed, things will be replaced again in kind with methods as they were done previously. We won't be saw cutting any reglets. We'll tooth it into the brick as it would have been done. And we'll notify staff as we go through. As a matter of fact, we'll probably be having monthly meetings if one of you would just like to come. Information on proposed material, replacement materials for the rear porch. All framing lumber will be kiln dried, treated, primed southern yellow pine. All the trim will come back in either cypress, cedar, or mahogany, whatever we're able to purchase for those rot-resistant materials. Gutter helmets, I don't know. We'll get up there and see what they are, and we'll find a sample of spring bronze weather stripping and submit for approval. final design of the columns, with any of the columns, woodwork, trim, shutters, we see have no reason to change them. We have no evidence that something else was there, so they'll be put back in kind. Repair and reconstruction of the brownstone, that's another of those items that we'll let you know when we know, when scaffolding is erected, and again, as we go around. And also those repair methods and any replacement materials or repair materials will be put up more or less like the same way we would a mock-up for masonry. Number seven is the exact same answer. We'll let you know as we know the extent of repairs in terms of area. Samples of repair materials used in brownstone, yes, agreed. We will show you insight, but out of sight samples as we get to those parts. Final colors will be, I think we have any intent to change? Match existing, but you can look at it before we go full on and paint it. Would you like to add anything else? That's all we have to say.
Thank you, Mr. Felder, and thank you, Ms. Isaacs, for the thorough report included in our packet. Are there questions for the applicant?
One.
Sure.
Have you copyrighted your work plan? Because it looks like you could sell it later.
The problem is they'd only sell about 8 copies. I do think it's perfect, but I don't know that she'll be able to retire on that.
Oh,
take the $8.
Any additional questions?
Yeah, I just have a comment. First of all, I think the plan's wonderful. Will Davenport House be closed during this?
No.
Are you going to remain open?
To the greatest extent possible.
Living through this.
And we're working around the various events that happen in the garden. We think north and east will close first. The sides will be worked on, and then we'll move around to the garden.
Have fun.
South and what?
East.
The outside pretty parts first.
Thank you. Mr. Thompson?
I also noticed the very, very, very complete spec, as I would call it, in the packet we had. And it probably is worth some money for someone to use. And I wonder if it wouldn't be appropriate to have a third-party contract with someone to on actually our staff's behalf, you know, follow your work and act as a independent reviewer consistent with the staff's recommendation, because it's a big project and probably a year's worth at least.
It is. We successfully did this on the interior. I can't tell you how many people offer their free opinions and thoughts and vast knowledge on masonry repair. We do have only 4 contractors are bidding on this, all proven experience. You have an architect that's engaged with experience, structural engineer with experience, and Ellie. So I think we got it. That would be a nice way to say, no, we don't want that.
Any additional questions for the applicant? Thank you, Mr. Felder. Is there a member of the public that wishes to speak?
Ellie Isaacs, Director of Preservation for Historic Savannah Foundation. HSF's Board of Trustees, staff, and ARC are in immense support of our project as it is submitted today. We want to thank MPC staff for their thorough review of the application, as well as our architect, Brian Felder, for taking us through this process and the ongoing bidding process. A comprehensive exterior restoration of the Davenport House is an endeavor that has never been done during HSF's ownership, and we are excited to be moving it forward in the new year. Also, make sure to keep an eye on our social media because we will be presenting educational opportunities that we'll be doing in conjunction with the restoration. So you can keep a close eye on us.
Thank you, Ms. Isaacs.
Yep.
I'm assuming HSF or the applicant doesn't want to respond to public comment. Oh, sorry, Mr. Jones.
Andrew Jones, Oglethorpe Plan Coalition. A question for the applicant. On the front facade over the two windows on the parlor floor on the left side, which would be the west side, there is a fissure that runs through the brick. Either there was settling or earthquake damage. Are you planning to simply fill that in with mortar? It's a rather thick line as a result. Or are you going to parge the brick and try to shift the brick so as to eliminate that particular crack?
Does the applicant wish to respond to public comment?
For now, I believe our intent is to leave the crack and to repatch it or patch it in time. Will you use mortar or to use some of one of your advancing materials?
So we'll have to look at it, obviously, when we get up there to repoint it. It might need some stitching, but it would be repointed. There are some other repairs that have been done piecemeal in the past that have been larger cracks as well. Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's all going to get repointed.
Okay, what she said.
Thank you.
Any other questions?
Any other public comment?
Or sit down.
I think you're good. No one online. All right, at this time, we will enter into board discussion and no further comment will be accepted. Mr. Houle, I'll start with you.
Wonderful project to a very important piece of Savannah.
Thank you, Mr. Houle. Ms. Woodfield?
I agree. It's a wonderful project, and it's nice that we're here to watch you do it. I think you're going to do a really thorough, fabulous job, so proud to have you working on it.
Thank you, Ms. Woodfield. Mr. Thompson?
Yes, thank you for your work on this and future work. Appreciate it.
Thank you, Mr. Thompson. Mr. Higgins?
Terrific project. I'm glad to see it.
Thank you, Mr. Higgins. I'm not going to go around a second time, but I'll entertain a motion.
Higgins, move the Savannah Historic District Board of Review with regard to 24-006112 COA, 324 East State Street, approve the rehabilitation work with the 9 conditions to be met prior to work beginning because the work is otherwise visually compatible and meets the standards.
Thank you, Mr. Higgins. There's a motion on the floor to approve with the 9 noted staff conditions. Do I have a second?
Woodfield, a second.
Thank you, Ms. Woodfield. Mr. Houle, how do you vote?
Aye.
Ms. Woodfield?
Aye.
Mr. Thompson?
Aye.
Mr. Higgins?
Aye.
The ayes have it. That motion and application is approved. That, thank goodness, brings us to the end of our regular agenda. We do not have any approved staff reviews to vote on and approve this month, nor do we have work performed without a COA. Nothing has been deferred to staff. You'll note that there are some notices and proclamations, stamp drawings, report inspections completed by staff. Under other business, we do have to hear from our nominating committee, which I believe is Mr. Thompson.
Well, I'm speaking on behalf of Mr. Higgins and Ms. Nagel. We discussed this and also discussed with the chair and the vice chair if they're willing to continue as chair and vice chair. The kind of tradition is that when you serve as a chair or vice chair, that it would continue to the second year of your time. So the committee recommends that we vote in favor of returning or continuing Karen and Melissa as chair and vice chair. And I could make that motion now if that's appropriate. I don't know. Any comments on that? Anybody running away today? No. Well, I would make a motion that we re-elect, I guess, Karen Gwynn and Melissa Rowan for chair and vice chair, respectively.
Higgins, second.
Thank you, Mr. Thompson. Mr. Higgins, we'll do a voice vote. All those in favor?
Aye.
Any opposed? Is there anything else that we need to discuss under new or old business?
I just wanted to note that you probably noticed there were no approved staff reviews. Hind is out sick today. You all know Hind, the amazing tech man here.
Oh, yes, we noticed.
Hind is working on all our staff reviews will be posted shortly on our website so that the public will be able to see all the staff reviews
and then ask any questions. So that should be happening shortly.
Okay, quick question. If you're posting those, is it going to be like all at once or is it on a rolling basis?
They're going to be done monthly, I believe. There's going to be kind of the way we do it with your minutes and everything. There'll be another drop down, little column there that you can click on that will say, you know, for you all, HDBR December 2024, and it'll have the staff reviews and then we'll do it. I believe that's how we're planning to do it.
Excuse me. And they will not be added once a month. They'll be added as the reviews are approved. Correct. So that, and that's the whole point. So that the public can see them sooner.
And so then on a, for our agendas moving forward procedurally, we won't, do we have to acknowledge or approve or we don't? That comes off the agenda.
Yes. Sorry. That will be removed.
Okay.
Why not after you go through the time frame that you're setting for them being out on the website to put them on the next agenda once?
We can put them on there if you'd like us to, but you're not really approving them because we've already issued the
just for public information.
Oh yeah, if you all would like us to still list them, there's no problem.
We don't need to read them off like we used to.
However you all, it's up to your.
Yeah, that's my preference. If the board goes along.
Okay, we'll make a note of that. Thank you.
Anything else? Bree, you had something else?
Yes, the calendar for 2025 needs to be approved as well.
Sorry, I didn't hear you.
The calendar for 2025 needs to be approved.
Oh. Sorry, I did see that. Bree has included the 2025 calendar, which is pretty much the same as the 2024 calendar.
With the exception that the cutoff date will be the date of the meeting, not the day after as it currently is.
Yes, thank you for noting that, Bree. There was a lot of, to be candid, it didn't make a lot of sense to me. And a lot of people said to me, why don't you just have it? It's just much easier for folks to keep track of if the filing deadline is actually the meeting, the same date as your meeting. So we made that decision to change that. We thought it made sense.
Look at us doing logical things. All right. I'll entertain a motion to approve the 2025 calendar.
Oh, you want to make a motion?
Cool.
I move.
Do we have a second?
Adopt the calendar.
Thompson, I'll give you the second.
Okay. All right.
All those in favor?
Aye.
Any opposed? All right. That motion is approved. The calendar for 2025 is approved. Is there any other business to be discussed today?
No, that just we'll see you all in the new year.
Yeah, I'll make a motion to adjourn. All those in favor?
Aye.
Thank you for your time.